It's the best bike vacation ever.
3 days of cycling in the Sierra foothills, camping under the stars, catered gourmet meals, entertainment, and in-camp activities.
It's the 20th annual Emigrant Trails Bike Trek,
Friday, September 8th through Sunday, September 10th. This excellent adventure attracts over 400 bicycle riders and helps support Breathe California Sacramento's efforts to improve air quality in our area and to work to eliminate lung disease. Make your plans now and start raising much-needed funds by registering today at sacbreathe.org or by calling 916-444-5900. You can ride as an individual or put together a team of co-workers or friends. Travel at your own pace through stunning scenery, then relax in a camp with massage, yoga, or a beverage from the cantina. Free training rides prepare you for the best bike vacation ever. The 20th Annual Emigrant Trails Bike Trek, September 8th through September 10th. 3 days of cycling, camping, and fun. Go to sacbreathe.org or call 916-444-5900 and sign up today.
Jeffrey Dahmer, David Berkowitz. Robert Charles Brown claims to be in that kind of infamous company.
Outside of the strangulation, most of them were stabbings with either a knife, a screwdriver, or an ice pick.
Sometimes a gun, says El Paso County, Colorado Sheriff Terry Makita. Brown, doing life in prison for murdering a 13-year-old girl, claims to have killed 48 men and women going back to 1970. Went out at times, he says, looking for someone to kill. The governor demanded the resignation or the firing of the chief of the agency that oversaw the big dig in Boston. Mass Turnpike Authority Chairman Matthew Amarillo resigned today, just 90 minutes before the hearing aimed at removing him would have started. President Bush says the conflict in Lebanon is more proof terrorist groups must be confronted by the free world. As for a lasting ceasefire,
as soon as we can get this resolved, the better, obviously. But it must be real. And it can't be fake.
There are indications Hezbollah is being shoved back from the Israeli border because rockets are not falling as deeply into the country. None, for example, in Haifa today.
I'm Vicki Barker in Beirut. Lebanon's health minister says hospitals have received 401 bodies of victims of the bombing campaign. But he says as many as 150 to 200 more bodies are still under the rubble. Impossible to recover them, he says, because those areas are still under fire.
Israel is calling up 30,000 reservists. And the UN has released a statement expressing its shock and distress over the bombing of a UN observer post in Lebanon. 4 UN observers died. Scientists say electric current can help wounds to heal more quickly. An international team of researchers found 2 genes that enable cells to respond to electrical signals to heal. And when they applied a mild current to the wound, healing happened faster. On Wall Street, the Dow lost 2 points today to close at 11,100. The Nasdaq was off about 16 points, and oil prices hit $74.54 a barrel. That's up 60 cents. This is CBS News.
Hey, Tanya Roberts here, and I want to know, where are you going on your next romantic getaway? Well, how about 3 days and 2 nights in Las Vegas? And what about, you don't pay a dime for it? That's right, act like a high roller in Vegas and pay nothing for it. It's all part of our celebration of Vegas' newest 5-star resort, Tahiti Village. We want you to get out of Dodge, stir up a little romantic magic in the most exciting city on earth with a complimentary second honeymoon, all on Tahiti Village. Come on. You know you deserve it. You know you want it. Las Vegas is calling. So stop what you're doing and call this special toll-free number, 877-33-GO-WIN. Oh, and as a bonus, if you call right now, they're going to throw in tickets to a hot show right on the strip. Can we say high roller treatment, baby? So call 877-33-GO-WIN for all the exciting details. That's 877-33-GO-WIN. Call now.
10 years since the Atlanta Summer Olympics bombings. If you remember the name Richard Jewell, you should also remember the word hero.
He was first praised as a hero, then castigated as a bombing suspect. Richard Jewell says he may never get his reputation back. A security guard at the Atlanta Olympics, Jewell spotted an unattended backpack and raced to clear the area before it exploded, killing a woman. Days later, he was erroneously branded a bombing suspect. He's paid a high price ever since. Now a Georgia sheriff's deputy, Jewell, says people forget heroes. They never forget villains.
CBS's Jim Crisula. In the end, Deputy Richard Jewell says he hopes people will remember he really did do the right thing. He is one of the good guys. What are zoos doing to help the animals cope with high heat? In Zurich, Switzerland, the big cats, apes, and wolves have been getting an alternative ice cream, frozen meat, berries, and bones to help bring down internal temperatures. And the animal handlers say it does help. Harley Carnes, CBS.
Hey, you streaming listeners, open your media player and click on the link to nohagglemortgage.com right now, and you can save thousands on your mortgage loan. Simple, easy, and takes less than 30 seconds. For the first time, homeowners can now have direct access to the same rates that mortgage brokers get. That's right, the same rates that mortgage brokers get. Three things allow nohagglemortgage.com to get the lowest mortgage rates in the industry. One, no commissions to pay loan officers. Two, most of the work is done over the internet, saving you a lot of money. 3. No haggling. Click on the link now, then click on Quick Quote to find out what rate you can get. Get your money faster and save thousands. No gimmicks, no middleman, no haggling. Just simple, fast, friendly, low-rate mortgage loans. Skip the loan officer. Go direct to nohagglemortgage.com. You're already online. Take 30 seconds and find out for yourself. Or go to nohagglemortgage.com. Check it out today. Licensed by the DOC.
Today's talking point from the official guide to being a good Republican. Talking point number 218. John Bolton is the best man for the job of UN ambassador. Sure, lily-livered Democrats would rather have someone in the job of UN ambassador who gets along with everyone. Someone with an open mind, who is ready to sit down, work out solution to problems. I don't know, be diplomatic. The United Nations is no place for discussion, compromise, or diplomacy.
Yeah.
Ha! John Bolton brings a fresh new outlook to the UN. He's a man who's not afraid to say, no, or you're fired, or get the hell out of my office before I hit you with a chair, you idiot. Even the liberal press will tell you, in his short time at the UN, John Bolton has done what no other UN ambassador was able to do. Unite the world against us. John Bolton brings nations together. We are proud to confirm John Bolton as UN ambassador because John Bolton puts the luster back in bluster.
Yeah! It's good that they killed those UN people. It's good that they did. How dare you say that Israel deliberately targeted them? I'm not saying it. I'm reading the newspaper. It was a Reuters story yesterday out of Dublin in the Irish newspapers. It didn't make it over here for a day. And then today it was in the New York Times from Dublin, a Reuters story. And it says, it's very small. It says an Irish army officer in South Lebanon warned the Israeli military 6 times that their attacks in the area were putting the lives of UN observers at risk, Ireland's foreign ministry said on Wednesday. Oh, we hate them damn Irish. What they ever do to you? 4 UN observers were killed in an Israeli airstrike in southern Lebanon on Tuesday. Quote, on 6 separate occasions, he was in contact with the Israelis to warn them that their bombardment was endangering the lives of UN staff in South Lebanon. End quote. A Department of Foreign Affairs spokesman said, quote, he warned, you have to address this problem or lives may be lost, end quote. The spokesman said of comments by a senior Irish soldier working as a liaison officer between UN forces in South Lebanon and the Israelis. So there were 6 phone calls throughout the day saying, cut this crap, you're going to kill us. And 4 of them were killed. What do you want me to say? It doesn't sound good that Israel did this, so let's not say it. Just ignore it, because anything Israel does is right. Even if Israel's foreign policy is now trumping America's foreign policy, even if Israel's foreign policy was written by the same neocons that wrote, we must invade Iraq, or else weapons of mass destruction will come here, and America is facing a grave and gathering threat from Iraq. Are the Iraqis better off with Saddam or without Saddam? I'll tell you what, you sickos. You answer that question. You answer that question. And assuming that the only choice we had was full-out occupation of Iraq or isolating Saddam Hussein in the world even further, oh, that wasn't a choice. It was either enter Iraq and go to Baghdad and take over the whole freaking country, break everybody, kill civilians by the hundreds of thousands, or do nothing. And Democrats are the ones with a failure of imagination, huh? Yeah. People are just so strange, and it's just a really weird thing that when you point out that Israel has its neocons and that they've thrown in with our neocons and this is the result of it, and that neocon foreign policy is exactly what we have here and there, and look what it did for us, now look what it's going to do for Israel. Oh, can't say that because anything Israel does is right. That's so sick and wrong. Let me tell you something. Putting Israel, surrounding it by failed states and creating enemies where there were none, like in Lebanon, the Lebanese people, they didn't, you know, the idea that they loved Hezbollah is bullcrap. They liked the political party of Hezbollah because Hezbollah actually opened up clinics and was taking care of some of the poorest of the Lebanese people, and, you know, but they never wanted Hezbollah to go on being an armed militia in the South. People in the South didn't want it. People were, like, ready to say, look, Hezbollah's, like, infused itself into the political life of this country, and now they've got a couple cabinet seats, and now they're in the parliament, and, you know, it's good because, you know, this is what a natural conclusion to Hezbollah's organization should be, that they throw down their weapons and join in the political discussion of the future of our country. I mean, that's what you would like to see everywhere, is all kinds of people be represented in a democracy and have representation and throw down their weapons. That, to me, is a good result. But instead, what did we do? They saw the end of Hezbollah. They saw that Hezbollah was becoming much more political and less military, and they just decided to shake that thing up. Meanwhile, Al-Qaeda's putting out videotapes declaring war against the United States and every place from Spain to America. They're going to attack now. He's Ayman al-Zawahiri, who's probably the guy that killed Sadat for making the peace with Israel over the Sinai. And you're telling me that peace between the Palestinians and the Israelis and peace between Israel and its neighbors isn't key to our terrorism problem? Solving that problem takes a lot of diplomacy. Solving that problem takes a lot of compromise. It takes a lot of UN observers. It takes a lot of the Arab League's cooperation. It takes a lot of cooperation from Jordan and from Egypt and from Lebanon. It's going to take a lot of cooperation from Syria and Iran as well. But we have said screw cooperation and screw diplomacy and screw land for peace, which 70% of the Israelis said they were for, and cater to that 30% of neocons that occupy that country, just like we got 23% here that occupy this country. Let's play to that crowd. And look what it gets you. Israel is going to come under the most audacious terrorist attacks, where they could have been in the 21st century, too, if they would not have fallen to this neocon, make war, it's good for your economy thing. And that's why Netanyahu was given this policy paper in the first place. They said, oh, but war is so good for your economy. It's great for you. It's crazy. It makes no sense whatsoever. Why do you think we give foreign aid to Egypt and Jordan? Because they cooperate with Israel and keep the peace. That's what it takes. I'm sorry. That's the global condition in which we find ourselves. Money talks and money buys peace. But this group, no. Money buys bombs. Money buys war. And in war, you can make a lot of money. This is good. It's so dangerous for us first And it's so dangerous for Israel that I don't understand why people who say that they love Israel, who say that they respect the history, who say they understand why that state exists, who say that Israel has a right to exist, more than a right to exist, that Israel needs protection, that Israel needs a guidance from the United States because it's got so much influence in the world. Why would you want the United States to lose its influence in the world so that Israel loses its influence in the world and is currently now surrounded by a multitude of groups that want to destroy it, including moderate Arabs in Lebanon who have had it. They have had it. I think they fired like 1,000 Katyusha rockets into Israel, and I'm not sure what the casualties are, but it's like a tenth of what Israeli bombs have done to Lebanon and to the civilian population of Lebanon. Why would you go down that road when you didn't have to go down that road unless it was for an economic plan that was sold to Israel by the neocons in America? Neocons or neocons, I don't care where they live, I don't care what their nationality is, I don't care what country they're sitting in, I don't care what their religion is. Neocons or neocons, and their plan is to make war. Their plan is to make a clean break with any peace process. Period. That's what the plan is. Make war. Complete and utter war. Every single place you can. What good can come of it? Well, if you're a defense contractor, you're for it. And if you're a human being on this planet with a conscience, you're against it. Period. End of story. Oh, I can't believe you said that. I'm reading it. America wouldn't torture. Uh-huh. And then when you saw the photographs that America did torture, you actually talked yourself into it. It's not really torture. It's just humiliation. Oh, I see. Sicking unmuzzled dogs on naked men is just humiliation. Freaks. Tell me what Abu Ghraib got us. A civil war. Sped it up, baby. Sped it all along. They weren't radicalized enough in Iraq. They were still holding on to hope. Oh, well, let's take that away from them. Let's show them what America can do to them. Let's torture guys that went out for a can of water or a gallon of gas or a loaf of bread. We'll round you all up. We'll throw you in Saddam's torture chamber, and we'll torture you there just like he did. That ought to radicalize the population, and it did. And now our soldiers are paying the price. They don't even know what they're there for anymore. And Rumsfeld's sitting there going, oh, I don't know. You know. As far as the Civil War, well, I thought about that last night. Last night? What do you think, I was born last night? 17 after.
The Randy Rhoads Show, where the sanitized come to be sanitized. This is Air America Radio.
It's the Morning Retort with...
The Morning Retort with Scott and Sam.
To understand it.
Miss Romney.
What drives people?
Massachusetts governor. If he can't protect his own citizens from tunnels, how will he protect you from terrorists? Done. Campaign is dead.
See how easy it was? It was that easy.
See, that's the problem on the left. You're the problem right there. You got all. You think you get all the answers to all the little questions that does not drive a lot of people outside of California, outside of both coasts, outside of California and New York. Northeast. I mean, this is not the world. This is not the center of the universe, Mr. Sims.
If Romney gets the nomination, the tunnels win. Think about it. Taurus, Terra, Earth, tunnels.
Do the math, Scott!
It's very erotic. I'm being turned on by all this talk.
Scott and Sims, mornings 5:30 to 9 on AM 1320, Sacramento's Left Channel.
I was in the water before I knew what happened. I reached up to stop an inner tube from going overboard. The next thing I knew, I was overboard too. Watching my boat, there was nothing I could do to avoid being hit. The first time the propeller cut through my back. The second time, it cut my hand and arm. A moment of operator inattention, a lifetime of can't forget. Because I survived, I can tell you how important it is to be responsible on your boat. Visit BoatSmarter.com and remember, if it's your boat, it's your responsibility.
The fact that somebody like Rush Limbaugh, who has made a career preaching that anybody who does drugs has got to go right to jail, do not pass go, no questions asked, right to jail, gets caught doing 30 OxyContin a day. 30 OxyContin? Do you have any idea how high that is? I don't, and I've been pretty high. But, wow, this guy is putting up Elvis numbers, ladies and gentlemen. But how does he get away with it? They say, well, he's on medication. Oh, see, that's not drugs. You know what, pal? We all got our medication, don't we? They can have an ad on TV that said, ask your doctor if Jack Daniels is right for you. And it would not be out of place thematically.
So one of these four peacekeepers obviously was from, well, one was from Austria, one was from Finland, one was from Canada, and one was from China. And those were the four that were killed. And in Kingston, Ontario today, the wife of the Canadian peacekeeper said they are clearly marked as UN observers. Why were they firing on that base? She said if those are precision guided missiles, then it's intentional. They hit them with three bombs. And another report says that they were under fire for 6 hours. And that's why they were in constant contact going, you got to stop bombing us. And it went on for 6 hours. The constant barrage of this UN peacekeeping post that was clearly marked. And four of the peacekeepers died. Look, that's the news. I mean, I can't. You know, it's like America would never torture people. And then you saw the photos. So you said, okay, I guess we do torture people, but we can't say that out loud. So we'll go, oh, they just humiliated them. They just humiliated them. It's unbelievable what people will talk themselves into in the name of saying, my country, right or wrong. That's not what a patriot says. You say, my country, I love my country when it's right, and when it's wrong, I write it. I don't understand people not wanting to know the news so that they can fix it before it spins out of control. Michael in Forest Hills.
Oh, how you doing, Randy?
I'm all right.
You had mentioned something about casualties before, and that's what I wanted to bring up. What I'd heard, I've been listening to a lot of the sales pitches on this whole Israel-Lebanon thing.
Mm-hmm.
And when an Israeli soldier or a couple of soldiers die, they always seem to make the analogy that if these were American soldiers with the American-sized population, that the number would be 8 or 10 times higher. In other words, they said like 9 Israeli died the other day, and if this had been in the United States, it would have been the equivalent of 76 or something like that. I wonder where those people were when they say 100,000 Iraqi civilians died, basing that on the American-sized population, which is more than 10 times as much.
Right.
So if it would have been American civilians that were dying, it would have been over 1 million.
It would have been if the numbers on the low end are from anywhere from 115,000 all the way up to 300,000, according to the Lancet, which is the British Medical Journal. So
right.
let's stay at the low end and be conservative about it. If 100,000 Iraqis would be, you know, compared to the population of the United States, it'd be 1 million people.
Exactly.
1 million people, and people aren't ready to say we committed genocide there.
It's unbelievable to me that, you know, and what really bothers me the most, more than their lies, is that I never hear a Democratic politician stand up and just say, they're lying to you. Why doesn't any of them ever stand up and say, when they say this, they are lying to you?
I've heard them say it. It took a really long time to get them to use the L word. I remember asking them to please use the L word before we went to war in Iraq. I went up to the Senate, and I met with the Foreign Relations Committee, and I told Joe Biden, you've got to call him what he is. He's a liar. And Biden said to me, why do you have to pick the hardest thing to do? And I said, excuse me, but they called President Clinton a liar for 8 years. And even
they impeached him.
Right, for lying under oath. He didn't commit perjury, but he did lie
right.
Because he parsed words and said, I did not have sexual... You know, he lied. There's no question he lied. Why is it that Democrats can say, yes, our president lied, but they have a terrible, terrible time of saying the Republican... It's almost like saying, you know, Israel can do no wrong. Anything Israel does is right, even if they've thrown in with the neocon psychos that have taken over our democracy. We don't have democracy here anymore. We don't have a free press anymore. We don't have free speech anymore. You've got threats of prosecution for reporters. You've got a media that you know, went along with the build-up to war, never questioned the administration, didn't debate whether or not we should go to war. Bush got away with not going back to get the second vote at the UN when he promised he would. No one said squat. Judith Miller put any crap she wanted in the New York Times. They printed it about pox on, you know, you have smallpox and flu and birds. And they print any old crap, and nobody says a word. But you put that liar word in there, forget it. All of a sudden, you know, you're marked for death.
Yeah, all of a sudden you're the sinner, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
It's incredible. And, I mean, everything that I ever said would happen if we went to Iraq has happened. Everything.
No.
And I'm telling you, everything that I'm telling you will that Israelis will face as a result of throwing in with these neocons will happen as well. They're going to see...
See, I don't even think it's a matter of neocons. I think it's simply a matter of the haves making sure the have-nots have nothing. And if they need to create war... in an area that has a resource that they want, they're going to do that. And the reason why we don't attack places like Saudi Arabia, who are committing terrible offenses against their own people, is because they're the haves.
Exactly.
So they just
the Saudis still take women to the sports stadium and behead them for adultery, and they're our ally. Are you insane?
The Randy Rhoads Show. Radio. Only smarter. This is Air America Radio.
You're listening to AM 13.
It's the best bike vacation ever.
3 days of cycling in the Sierra foothills, camping under the stars, catered gourmet meals, entertainment, and in-camp activities.
It's the 20th annual Emigrant Trails Bike Trek, Friday, September 8th through Sunday, September 10th. This excellent adventure attracts over 400 bicycle riders and helps support Breathe California Sacramento's efforts to improve air quality in our area and to work to eliminate lung disease. Make your plans now and start raising much-needed funds by registering today at sacbreathe.org or by calling 916-444-5900. You can ride as an individual or put together a team of co-workers or friends. Travel at your own pace through stunning scenery, then relax in a camp with massage, yoga, or a beverage from the cantina. Free training rides prepare you for the best bike vacation ever. The 20th Annual Emigrant Trails Bike Trek, September 8th through September 10th. 3 days of cycling, camping, and fun. Go to sacbreathe.org or call 916-444-5900 and sign up today.
And get the promotion you deserve. Now's the time. Explore your options. Log on to sackjobs.com and post your resume today. That's sackjobs.com. Post your resume and have local employers find you now. New companies being added each day and hundreds of jobs being added each week. So if you're in the market for a job, sackjobs.com is a click away. At sackjobs.com, you're on your way to a better day.
You know something? There's nothing wrong with a culture where everyone has a different idea of what's humorous. The last time I can remember an entire nation being on the same page, it was Germany in the late 30s, and it didn't really turn out that funny. Remember, in its time and place, what Hitler said was considered politically correct. And it's that blind adherence to what is situationally palatable that is truly dangerous. We should question it all, poke fun at it all, sick on it all, rail against it all, and most importantly, for Christ's sake, laugh at it all. Because the only thing separating Holy Writ from complete disorder is your perspective. It's your only weapon. Keep the safety off. Don't take yourself too seriously. Remember that at the end of the day, this is just an ant farm with beepers, and it takes zero politically correct society to screw in a light bulb because they are perpetually in the dark. Of course, that's just my opinion. I could be wrong.
Another AM 1320 Left Channel Action Calendar. You're invited to a global warming party. This Thursday, July 27th, the Union of Concerned Scientists and Sacramento Area Peace Action will premiere a new documentary about global warming in California. The screening will take place at 909 12th Street at 7 p.m. In the next few months, the California legislature will vote on an economy-wide cap on global warming emissions. This crucial bill could become a model for other states across the nation. To bolster a powerful groundswell of support for AB 32, Union of Concerned Scientists activists across the state will simultaneously host the premiere of this new documentary on global warming in California. After the screening, there will be an exclusive conference call with UCS California Director Jason Mark and other special guests who will talk about the latest in climate research and solutions that could help us reduce global warming emissions. That's this Thursday, July 27th at 909 12th Street. You can register for the event by going to sacpeace.org.
After Bob in San Antonio.
Hi, Randy. I'm just at the point where the only thing I can hear coming out of the left's mouth is we negotiate with terrorists.
Yes, we do.
And
Israel does too.
I hate
to tell you that, but they've negotiated with terrorists so often that it's actually brought them a great deal of peace to do so. You don't negotiate with your friends. You negotiate with your enemies.
Okay, I'm not saying I hate you for it.
I'm just saying I don't understand. I don't understand this bumper sticker mentality that says, "Oh, that's right, we don't negotiate with terrorists." Who the hell do you negotiate with? Your friends? Your allies?
I have a small example. I run a small business, and
what does your small business have to do with American foreign policy?
Here it is. There's a big company in Austin that sells computers. Everybody knows who they are.
They're your enemy.
No, he's my best friend. Because
what does this have to do with terrorism?
Because terrorism is just like small business.
Right, you know, you don't understand.
Why do they get to do bad things to us and then demand for us to go towards their methods in order to hear, okay, we'll be nicer to you? And
who do you negotiate with? Your allies?
When I talk about negotiating...
Who do you negotiate with? Your allies?
Somebody that has something to offer us.
Or do you negotiate with people who are hurting you and you want it to stop?
Someone that has something to offer.
You see, that's what diplomacy is, my friend. It's the political negotiation of disputes to prevent and avoid more death. You don't negotiate with your allies. You negotiate with your enemies, dork.
Did you ever see...
Oh, God. We don't negotiate with terrorists. Oh, yes, we do. Roger in North Carolina.
Hey, Randy, how you doing?
I'm all right.
Tell me something. Now, you asked the question a few minutes ago, was Iraq better off with Saddam or without him? Personally, I feel that if we go in there and do like we said we were going to do and rebuild, they'd be better off without him.
Agreed.
But it's been 5 years now.
5 years.
And nobody has picked up a hammer. Now, what? How come? You know, we spent all this money over there, and nobody has built the first house.
Because it's by design. These are not peaceful people that control our awesome military or our foreign policy. They're running around putting in sick minds these little bumper stickers. Are you better off with Saddam or without? That was a false choice anyway, okay? The true choice was, do you want to continue to contain Saddam and go and build a consensus in the world to keep the sanctions on him? Sure, there's going to be some cheating. People always want a problem solved 100%. And if it can't be solved 100%, then it's all-out war. That's crazy. That's just stinking thinking. So the false choice was better off with or better off without, when the truth was smart sanctions. Smart sanctions isolate him. Make him come to the table. Make him say he's ready to give up whatever it was that we wanted him to give up. But that wasn't on the table, was it? There was no diplomatic attempt. There was we had weapons inspectors in there. You had Bush lying about it. They came up with nothing. You had Bush lying about it. Then we went in there with something so audaciously named shock and awe. Who the hell are we to actually tell a population of 25 million innocent people, watch this. This is going to be shock and awe, baby. And punish the whole civilian population of a country that had nothing to do with this leader, this guy who took over in a military coup when we actually supported him. We supported him. For years we supported him. He was our dictator. The nerve. And then we took it out on the innocent people of Iraq who lived with him. It's just insane. Amy in San Diego.
Hey, Randy, I just wanted to respond to that idiot that just said we don't negotiate with terrorists.
Yes, we do.
What about Bush 1 negotiating with the Iranian terrorists that were holding our hostages to keep them longer so Reagan could win the election? They have such selective memory, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, you know, what about Muammar Gaddafi? He's a terrorist. He bombed, Pan Am Flight 800 over Lockerbie, Scotland, blew it right out of the sky. He was a terrorist. Exactly. And now Dick Cheney has done business with him while sanctions were on Libya.
Right.
And now all of a sudden we've decided, well, we'll negotiate with him, tell him to give up his nuclear ambitions, and we'll normalize relations. That's a negotiation with a terrorist.
Exactly. You don't negotiate with your friends. There's nothing to negotiate.
Hello.
Thanks, Randy.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye. Zorro in Tennessee.
Long time, Randy. How you doing?
I'm good. You?
I'm not, because I'm just so offended by this guy in Texas who called you and said, we only negotiate with people who have something to offer us. And, you know, I've watched CNN International for the last week, and I would just like to say there is something to offer us. How about decency? How about the decency of knowing that my government didn't allow a bunch of innocent people to be slaughtered? Because every night I see these Lebanese people pulling their kids out of rubble, and I'm quite sick of it.
And
I really am.
Let me tell you something. And the Israelis, too. 51 dead Israelis, about 600 dead Lebanese. Civilians. For what? For what?
What is the dispute
between the Lebanese people and the Israeli people? There is none. There's no dispute. The dispute is with whether or not Hezbollah has to be disarmed. The answer to that clearly is yes. They are the armed part of Hezbollah is a terrorist organization as far as Israel is concerned. As far as the Lebanese people are concerned, they would rather do without Hezbollah being armed, but they still think that they were protecting them from the occupation that went on when Israel occupied Lebanon, and they're grateful that they fought to free Lebanon of Israeli occupation. However, they think that their usefulness as an armed militia has come and gone, and there was a negotiation to be had. We could have had a negotiation that said, look, Mr. Nasrallah, you saw the beauty of making Hezbollah into a political movement. You've gotten cabinet positions. You've gotten parliament members. You know, isn't it time for you to put down your arms? Here's your incentive. And that's who you negotiate with. But no, they made a clean break from the peace process, and they went for all-out war. And you know what kills me? This sick guy that called me from San Antonio. Every single war, every dispute, every terrorist act always ends in a negotiation. Always.
It bothers me, Randy, that we have this segment of our society now that's all about me, me, me.
And war.
You know, I remember when the United States did what was right instead of just what benefited the United States.
Yeah, I remember when we did what was difficult instead of doing what was easy. Killing things and breaking things is easy. Making things and creating life is difficult.
If Hezbollah was such a terrorist organization that was so horrible, how come the Lebanese military is shooting at Israel and not Hezbollah? You know, and on their website.
Well, you know what's really interesting to me? Check this out. I mean, I don't know if you know this or not, but Lebanon's army is tiny. I mean, they're a brand new democracy, brand new. And they're tiny, their army. And their army is made up of people who, you know, fought during the occupation as well. And so they're loyal to Hezbollah, who came in to fight against the Israeli occupation. So a third of the small army, which is about 50,000 people, is loyal to Hezbollah. If you ask the Lebanese army to get involved in this, the Lebanese army is going to fight with Hezbollah. I got news for you. So, you know, there's no way that you could ask the Lebanese army to disarm Hezbollah, because they can't. They didn't have the means to do it or the will to do it. But we could have come in as an honest broker and said, you know, look, we care. We see this emerging democracy in Lebanon. We love that you had elections. You know, George Bush was saying what a great day it was when the Lebanese picked this moderate guy, Sonori, and how well and orderly their elections went. And this is a model democracy now. And isn't this great? And now he's attacking the same people that just voted last year for this moderate guy. And they, you know, the cold, hard truth of it is that the Lebanese government is brand new. The military is tiny. They couldn't disarm Hezbollah if they wanted to. The Israelis and the Americans could have through negotiations.
What is this spin that we can't have a ceasefire until we negotiate a peace? Can we not have a ceasefire?
Oh, that's a load of crap. Listen, you know, the more people you kill on both sides, the harder it is to get a negotiation going.
And when you kill a Chinese person for the UN, that doesn't help our situation at all. I want to remember that next time that we ask China to handle the North Korea situation, that we allowed their people to die too, working for the UN. It's just making everything worse for us, and people can't see it.
And the Canadians.
Everything worse.
And a Canadian and an Austrian and somebody from Finland, a Finnish person. What the hell was that about? And why won't they apologize? And you know something? The idea that
because it was Hezbollah. It was Hezbollah's fault, according to Tony Snow. Snow said it's all Hezbollah. I watched a 10-story apartment.
Well, I'll tell you something.
Blown to shivering.
You know, these Katyusha rockets that they have, these pathetic
Can I say one more thing, Randy? They keep blowing up these apartment buildings and stuff, and they say, well, they're targeting Hezbollah because they go there, and they're using these civilians as shields. They live there, okay? Hezbollah lives among...
No. Here's how it goes. The Lebanese people voted for Hezbollah to stop being a terrorist organization and just become part of the political process. And that's how Hezbollah put down their arms and started to become part of the political process. There's a couple cabinet seats, and there's a lot of parliament seats that are held by them. And so you have to understand that almost all the Lebanese are thankful to Hezbollah for being what they considered a militia that fought against the occupation. And that they put down their weapons, and that they join the political arm, resistance.
Right.
But there still is a faction of Hezbollah that is still armed with these rockets that needs to disarm. There's no question they should not be armed anymore. How are we how are we going to sell that idea now that we've shown them that they need to be armed?
What bothers me, Randy, is when these people who actually do live in apartments and stuff, even though some of them are in Hezbollah, they have houses, they live in apartments.
Yes, but when they say they're in Hezbollah, they mean that they're part of the political party of Hezbollah, not the terrorist group.
Right. The Israelis and Tony Snow act like there's some clubhouse in the desert called the Hezbollah clubhouse, and if they're not in there, then they shouldn't be anywhere else. They're not allowed to go anywhere. And
listen, here's the difference. Al-Qaeda is nothing but a pure terrorist movement. That's all it is. It only exists to kill. That's it. It exists to cause damage, harm, and to kill people. We've not gone after them. Instead, you've got what was left over of what is, recognized by us as being a terrorist organization, Hezbollah. But you've got most of Hezbollah joining in the political realm, putting down weapons, joining the government, being part of the political, you vote for me or you don't vote for me. I win or lose based on how well I serve the people of Lebanon. We're now a democracy, and it's an open question. Do you want us in participating in the politics of this country, or do you not want us? But there is a part of them that's still armed that should not be. Now, how do you disarm people when you're showing them that you need more arms, not less, by bombing them?
Exactly.
It's because the goal is not to disarm terrorists. The goal is to inflame them. They want a full-throttled nuclear holocaust. This is called thinning out the herd.
It's scary that they think they can just put the word terrorist in front of anything now and do what
they used to do it with communists, and then before that they did it with fascists.
Yeah.
But, you know, truly, we're becoming fascist. We're going down that road. We're telling you what your lot in life is and who to blame for it. All they do is sell you fear. I'm not the one that came up with a terror color. I'm not the one that runs Chiron under my show that says terror threat elevated. That would be your Fox News network. They sell fear because fear is all they have to sell. You know, when FDR was president, he said, you have, as an American, you have the right to be free of fear. Freedom from want and freedom of fear. And this president only exists to make you more fearful so that he can do whatever the hell he wants, which includes genocide. We're going fascist, baby. You say it can't happen here? It's happening here. 48 after.
The Randy Rhodes Show. Still your best defense against Orwellian neocon man pigs.
Human-animal hybrids.
This is Air America Radio.
It's the Randy Rhodes Show.
That have to be really, really happy about all this news about a war is the Catholic Church. Oh, yeah, they got to be happy because they're off the front page of the paper for the first time in a long time. Woo! Woo! And I am a recovering Catholic. Some of you are here tonight, yes? So I've been following this story. I went to 16 years of Catholic education. I'm lucky I'm alive. I went to Our Lady of Psychological Warfare. I've always felt felt that if women have to be in the military, they should only be lesbians. Because we would never get around to having a war. Right? Because we'd have to have some meetings. A war in October? What about the softball banquet?
Hey, you streaming listeners, open your media player and click on the link to NoHaggleMortgage.com right now, and you can save thousands on your mortgage loan. It's simple, easy, and takes less than 30 seconds. For the first time, homeowners can now have direct access to the same rates that mortgage brokers get.
That's right, the same rates that mortgage brokers get.
Three things allow NoHaggleMortgage.com to get the lowest mortgage rates in the industry. One, no commissions to pay to loan officers. Two, most of the work is done over the internet, saving you a lot of money. Three, no haggling. Click on the link now, then click on Quick Quote to find out what rate you can get. Get your money faster and save thousands. No gimmicks, no middleman, no haggling. Just simple, fast, friendly, low-rate mortgage loans. Skip the loan officer. Go direct to NoHaggleMortgage.com. You're already online. Take 30 seconds and find out for yourself. Or go to NoHaggleMortgage.com. Check it out today. Licensed by the DOC.
Welcome to Los Angeles, where I believe the official sunscreen is now lead, isn't it, pretty much? Oh, my God, this heat. I was sweating like Naomi Campbell trying to hire a maid. It was so hot today. It was so hot in Hollywood today. Brad and Angelina adopted Ben and Jerry. Did you know that? It was so hot in Encino. Michael Jackson actually stopped at a young boy's lemonade stand and just bought the lemonade. You know the worst part about this heat wave across the country is Al Gore walking around going, I told you so. Actually, if Al Gore's movie on global warming is correct, as you know, the ice caps are shrinking. You all know about that. The glaciers are shrinking. And the only thing not shrinking, Al Gore, apparently. Have you seen Al? Really not shrinking. I tell you, the heat, it puts people in a bad mood. You know, in fact, coming into work today, people were swearing like President Bush near an open mic. It was unbelievable.
Laughing at the truth. AM 1320.
Get it through your head. You do negotiate with terrorists, okay? Because one man's terrorist is another man's freedom fighter. And what we're being called are terrorists in Iraq. We're there, and the Iraqis just see nothing but death and dying and death and no medical supplies and no humanitarian relief and no electricity and no... And quite frankly, we're not terrorists, okay? Our president chose a war. It was a war of choice, a war of first choice, not last resort. And so... now we're viewed as the terrorists. How do you like it? And the only way to solve Iraq is through a political process. And so they're going to have to negotiate with their terrorist occupiers. No, they're going to negotiate with their allies. Give me a freaking break. Of course you negotiate with terrorists. Dick Cheney did business with Muammar Gaddafi. He's a world heavyweight champion terrorist. Blew airplanes out of the sky. Killed innocent civilians on a passenger plane. And, you know, he's cool now because we negotiated something that gave Dick Cheney the opportunity to do business in Libya. Jeff in Durango, Colorado.
Hey, I just want to point out that if negotiating with terrorists is wrong, then why do we have hostage negotiation teams?
Hello.
You know, obviously, it's time for the negotiation is appropriate.
Yes, it is. Because, look, every war, including World War II, including the Pacific part of World War II and the European part of war, it was all settled in a negotiation at the end. Everything was settled in a negotiation in the end. And if you remember, the leader of Japan went around apologizing to everybody because that was part of the negotiated settlement with Japan. You're going to apologize. That's the way it always happens. That's the way it always ends. Anthony in New Jersey.
Hey, Randy.
Hi.
Let me just say that you have been on fire this week. Your shows have been absolutely captivating, and I can't get enough of it lately. Let me also just say that, you know, just a few months ago, they were saying that in Lebanon was the shining example of Arab democracy, and that this was the great experiment to shine the light of democracy on the Arab world. And just one last thing about negotiating with terrorists. You know, they claim that Hezbollah is a terrorist organization. What about the IRA? You know, didn't the IRA put down their weapons and join the political process? And,
yes, that's
and
a good Great example. That's a very good example. Sinn Féin is now a political party, and they were terrorists. There's no,
right, and there was growing pains, but they didn't lay waste to Northern Ireland during the growing pain process.
Well, it was pretty bloody there. It really was. It was pretty horrible. But, yes, they're now a political party, and they operate inside of the Irish Parliament, and that's what's supposed to happen.
Right, and there's a negotiation.
And there is a negotiation that causes that to occur because people see the benefit in putting down their arms, and they see that there's going to be a negotiated settlement, so they decide to become part of the political process instead of being left behind. So, yes, you always negotiate with terrorists. You negotiate until your head caves in. Negotiation always happens with your enemies. It never happens with your allies. You negotiate with people who you don't agree with in the world, and you do it so that it doesn't come to more bloodshed.
Mm-hmm.
So, Mike in Lancaster.
Hey, Randy, how are you doing?
I'm all right.
You know, one of my favorite movies is The American President.
Oh, I love that movie.
And what you were just saying in the last segment, I want to quote this from the movie. You know, Michael Douglas's speech at the end when he's talking to the press club or the press corps, quote, Bob Rumson is not the least bit interested in solving it. That's the Republican character. He is interested in only two things. Only making you afraid of it and telling you who's to blame for it.
Yep.
That, ladies and gentlemen, is how you win elections.
Yeah.
And Karl Rove must have watched this. It must be his favorite movie, too, because this is the playbook. Unfortunately, we don't have a president like the Michael Douglas character. But Aaron Sorkin wrote that movie 12 years ago, and it's still brilliant writing. And, of course, we all know he did The West Wing.
Oh, that movie, everybody should watch The American President.
Absolutely.
Everybody should watch that movie because, it took place in the Clinton era. And you'll see how they called Sidney Allen Wade a whore.
Right.
And it was all about the president having an affair. But, his wife had died. And yes, Bob Rumson.
They can't morally attack him because
Bob Rumson's problem isn't that Bob doesn't get it. His problem is he can't sell it.
Right.
Yeah, that was a great movie.
Yeah.
Fabulous.
Well, you keep up your good work, and you know you were saying
Well,
earlier.
You know, I'm trying to make the peace here, and it's very difficult, as it always is, because it's something worth having. And anything worth having is worth fighting for. And peace is one of those things.
At Cache Creek Casino Resort, win fast, win often with Cache Fever Jackpot. Jackpots start at $20,000 and are guaranteed to hit by $30,000. Every time a Cache Fever Jackpot hits, a Cache Club player wins just for playing with their card. Plus, you can check the Cache Fever Jackpot total and your Cache Club points online now at CacheCreek.com. So join Cache Club today and get the fever. Cache Creek Casino Resort.
1320 KCTC, Sacramento's Left Channel.
Left Channel.
Streaming live at 1320leftchannel.com.
A positive drug test for the winner of the Tour de France.
All I'm asking for, from just from me, is that I'd be given a chance to prove that I'm innocent.
And have Colorado authorities uncovered one of the country's worst serial killers.
He's kind of taunted us off and on over the years.
This is the CBS World News Roundup Late Edition. I'm Cammy McCormick. He won the Tour de France in a stunning comeback, and now another shocking turn. American Floyd Landis has failed a drug test.
The drugs we're talking about here, I think people should know, is testosterone. And we're talking about ratios of testosterone that are very carefully calibrated and permissible as far as the World Anti-Doping Agency is concerned.
Correspondent Armin Katay and Landis held a conference call with reporters at this past hour.
Everybody take a step back. I don't know what your position is now, and I wouldn't blame you if it was a bit skeptical because of what cycling has been through in the past and the way other cases have gone.
Landis says he plans to submit to other tests tomorrow. He says he's taking a small amount of hormones for a thyroid condition and getting cortisone shots for hip pain, and he says that may have skewed the results. Now this.
When other ways of getting to sleep don't work, there's something you should know. Tylenol PM relieves pain and sleeplessness with the pure pain relief of Tylenol and a sleep aid that's safe and non-habit forming when used as directed. So it will help when other ways can't. Stop. Think. Tylenol PM.
CompUSA email bag.
Lisa emails, Dear CompUSA, I need a great camera, but I'm a student, so I also need a great deal. Okay, Lisa, how about $120 off a 5-megapixel Kodak EasyShare digital camera? That's right, $120 off. That puts it under $130 after savings and rebate, our lowest price ever. That and hundreds more back-to-school deals are good through Saturday at CompUSA. We got it, we get it. See store for details.
A chilling revelation from a Colorado man serving time for murder. He has claimed responsibility for up to 48 killings nationwide. Robert Charles Brown has told authorities that murders took place over a 20-year period.
Essentially says there's one in Washington, two in California, nine in Colorado, two in New Mexico, seven in Texas, two in Oklahoma, 17 in Louisiana, three in Mississippi, and five in Arkansas.
El Paso County Sheriff Terry Makita says it was a cold case investigator who Brown eventually opened up to, saying he'd strangled, shot, or stabbed his victims.
He would have a real difficult time giving us names. So in most cases, we wouldn't have a name. We would often have a location where he claimed to dump the body.
If Brown's claims are verified, it would make him one of America's worst serial killers. In Lebanon, there was no let-up in the fighting today. The country's president, Emil Lahoud.
I believe that they are going to have everything destroyed in Lebanon.
Israel is giving no indication the military action will end soon, but its inner cabinet has apparently ruled out a full-scale ground invasion.
The top Army and Air Force generals wanted government permission to send in a lot more ground troops, hoping to overwhelm Hezbollah fighters. But Israeli political leaders felt that would look like an all-out invasion, as in 1982. Prime Minister Olmert declared that the current mix of pinpoint attacks on specific villages, plus the use of air power to knock out rocket launchers, seems to be about right.
Correspondent Dan Rabib, at least 27 people died in Baghdad today in a series of car bombings and mortar attacks. CBS News correspondent Mark Strassman is in the Iraqi capital.
There are about 100 civilians a day being killed here, about half of them in Baghdad. This is a security crisis that is getting worse, not better. More than 4,000 U.S. troops are on their way to patrol the city streets, and people here are wondering whether they can really make any difference because this violence, for now, in certain neighborhoods at least, is just out of control.
More U.S. troops are heading there to assist in security. And as CBS News correspondent David Martin reports from the Pentagon, some tours are being extended for soldiers already on the ground.
Defense Secretary Rumsfeld has made the decision to extend a brigade of about 3,700 troops currently in Iraq past their one-year tour of duty in order to be available for this new Baghdad security plan.
You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
I want to let you in on a little secret, but before I do, could I...
Good evening. I would like to report on the state of our war against the American people. We're mounting a sustained campaign to crack down on every American and every person of every faith and every nation, and to bring them to justice. All missions are being executed according to plan, without warning or provocation. Americans are being swept up in an international dragnet. Thousands of FBI agents are on the trail of other citizens here and abroad. It has everything to do with hate and evil and murder and prejudice. America is strong, strong, strong.
Federal agents, we are armed!
Cannot be forced into existence, nor can it be won through painful struggle.
You're listening to AM 1320 KCTC.
Freedom cannot be bought or sold. It has nothing to do with one's social status. One's profession is of no consequence.
Sacramento's Left Channel.
In order for you to accept yourself as you are and live with your soul at peace, you must simply teach yourself to let it be. Only then will you discover freedom.
And streaming live at 1320leftchannel.com.
Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where the truth comes to party. The left has never been so right or so sexy. The left just got a little bit louder on the Majority Report.
Hello, America. The Majority Report. I'm John Elliott, sitting in for Sam Cedar. How are you? Happy Thursday. How you doing? Well, we opened yesterday's show with the news that four UN workers in Lebanon have been killed by an Israeli rocket. And now we hear that Secretary General of the UN, Kofi Annan, had made a statement that he thought it was deliberate. What happened today? No news on this. Just ignore it and it goes away. What message does this send to the world? What message does it send to the UN or NATO that are going to need to be providing peacekeeping troops at some point? Israel's now calling up reserves. And Condi Rice says a quick ceasefire wouldn't be a lasting ceasefire. So logic, according to our Secretary of State, if you don't want a ceasefire, you don't want a ceasefire because if you had a ceasefire, it wouldn't really be a ceasefire, and then there's no ceasefire at all. So since there's no ceasefire, you'd have fighting, and that would mean you wouldn't have a ceasefire, so what's really the point in having a ceasefire before there's really a ceasefire? Got it? In the meantime, the clock ticks, and the planes bomb, and the rockets are launched, and the guns fire, and people, innocents, civilians, die. Some are only wounded. Homes and families are destroyed, and the hatred rises, and America's Secretary of State prolongs the conflict by rhetorical doublespeak and embarrasses us in front of the world once again. Did you see the picture on the front page of the New York Times today? Prime Minister of Lebanon speaking and Condi Rice holding her hand to her forehead, clearly in over her head, clearly out of her league. And as the fighting rages on, and Israel calls up more troops, their version of the National Guard, as all this continues on, where's Condi Rice now? Malaysia. You think I'm making this up? She's in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia, at a conference. Now, Malaysia is just down the road, metaphorically speaking, from Indonesia, the largest Muslim country in the world. So, of course, she's going to have a very warm welcome there. By the way, when the pinching prime minister of Iraq, the third prime minister that we've installed, spoke to Congress yesterday, did he say how his plan to give amnesty to any insurgents who killed Americans but not Iraqis was going? I missed that part. Now, a couple of things here. He said that, didn't he? He said that, you know, there's two ways to look at it. One way is that he's actually saying this to Americans. We don't care that you've been over there and allegedly trying to help liberate us and free us from Saddam Hussein and doing all the wonderful things you've been doing. We don't care about you. So if insurgents kill you, they are freedom fighters. They're actually treating you as occupiers. And so we want you gone. We don't want them killing other Iraqis. That would not be good. That would be traitorous. But it's okay for them to kill you. I don't think somehow that that would be very well received on the floor of the United States Congress. Point is it true? Is that really what they feel? The second thing is, if they don't feel that way, what was he doing saying that? Why did he tell people that? Why did he say that? Why is he offering amnesty? Of course, he's, you know, front page of CNN yesterday telling everybody that he wants to be a player in the Middle East peace accord. Meanwhile, we have the Secretary of State, not the oil tanker, somewhere in Malaysia, in Kuala Lumpur, booting around telling us that this is a beginning. These are birth pains in a new world order in the Middle East. There's a whole new Middle East dawning, and this is just this conflict is just birth pains, growing pains. You kidding me? These people are so out of touch. They are so out of touch. It's just unbelievable. By the way, how are things going in Iraq today? Nice, nice. You know, another few explosions, another bunch of people dead. Hey, you know, if you're new to me, which means if you haven't heard my show here in San Diego, or before when I guest hosted for Sam and Janine, on my last broadcast at the end of every month, I read the names of the American servicemen and women who died in Iraq that month. So tomorrow I will be reading the names of the 36-odd people that were alive 1 month ago today that are not alive now. But you don't hear much about them for two reasons. One, you're not hearing much about them at all because of the conflict between Hezbollah and Israel. But the second thing is you never hear about them anyway. You, Lord knows, you don't see any of their flag-draped coffins. We got 2,565 that we could show you, but, you know, you don't see those. So I honor these people. I honor these brave people that left here, left their homeland, and died in the sand. I honor them because, by God, somebody has to. So I'll be doing that tomorrow. I am so glad you joined me today. We have so much show for you this evening. Listen to this lineup of guests. The great Jonathan Alter is going to be with us in a few minutes. Senior editor of Newsweek magazine, regular columnist, one of the brightest cats around. Doesn't mince words. The best op-ed columnist in America, Paul Krugman, economics professor and at Princeton, world-class economist, joining us this hour. Former U.N. weapons inspector Scott Ritter, who told the world there were no WMDs in Iraq, and of course was drowned out, got a new book called Target Iran. It's coming out. We got him first before anybody else. And then Michael Shearer. Now, who's Michael Shearer? Well, he's the best-selling New York Times best-selling author of a book called Imperial Hubris. Remember that? Only it wasn't written by Michael Shearer. It was titled Anonymous because he actually was a CIA agent at the time and could not come out. He's got another book out called Through Our Enemy's Eyes, Osama Bin Laden, Radical Islam and the Future of America. Now, why does this individual happen to know a little bit about Osama Bin Laden? Well, I am so glad you asked, because he is the individual in the CIA who was responsible for opening up and managing
the bin Laden unit with inside the CIA. So you've got a CIA expert, a person who gave for his country at the CIA, who's now written books, and he ran the bin Laden unit. And now it's disbanded. How do you think that makes him feel? How do you think that makes us feel from a safety point of view? Are we safer? Michael Shearer is going to join us this hour. So we're going to get the show underway. We're going to take a few moments. We're going to sell you some stuff. We want you to buy it. Support our sponsors. SOS, support our sponsors. And it's John Elliott on the Majority Report on the Air America Radio Network. We will be back with the great Jonathan Alter.
Arguing with your conservative friends? Call your local liberals at the Majority Report.
It's the best bike vacation ever. 3 days of cycling in the Sierra foothills, camping under the stars, catered gourmet meals, entertainment, and in-camp activities. It's the 20th annual Emigrant Trails Bike Trek, Friday, September 8th through Sunday, September 10th. This excellent adventure attracts over 400 bicycle riders and helps support Breathe California Sacramento's efforts to improve air quality in our area and to work to eliminate lung disease. Make your plans now and start raising much-needed funds by registering today at sacbreathe.org or by calling 916-444-5900. You can ride as an individual or put together a team of co-workers or friends. Travel at your own pace through stunning scenery, then relax in a camp with massage, yoga, or a beverage from the cantina. Free training rides prepare you for the best bike vacation ever. The 20th Annual Emigrant Trails Bike Trek, September 8th through September 10th. 3 days of cycling, camping, and fun. Go to sacbreathe.org or call 916-444-5900 and sign up today.
What are you looking for?
Absolutely.
Nothing.
Say it again, y'all.
Wow.
Look out.
What are you looking for?
Absolutely.
Nothing.
Listen to me.
Oh,
wow. I despise. Cause it means that you're just a missing life. Warm me is tears. Get out of the mother's eyes. When the sun goes to rain. And lose.
Y'all. What is it good for?
Absolutely.
Nothing.
Get sad again.
Wow.
Ooh, la, la.
Report is taking some time off. Sitting in for Sam Cedar, John Elliott, the most dangerous liberal in America.
Welcome back to the Majority Report. Thanks for joining us this Thursday evening. We make your time worthwhile. We're air conditioning for your political soul here, keeping you cool. Ron, Hollywood, Florida, you're on the Majority Report with John Elliott. How are you?
They cut the funding for the living for people with disabilities, and they all have to move out. Governor Bush did that.
And what do you mean?
So I got upset and mailed him my Prozac. I'm not lying. I mailed him and his brother some Prozac and got in big trouble. My mom told me I can feel that way, but I can't mail it.
What's your disability?
Bipolar.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd like to make a movie on why President Bush is so mean to people with disabilities.
Uh-huh.
I think he hates people with disabilities because he's cutting all the funding.
Well, what do you mean he's cutting the funding?
Well, there's some friends of mine that live in Living Waters, and they're making them all move out to build condos.
Really? Where do they have to move to?
They have to move into other living facilities, and it's very depressing for what they're doing down here to people with disabilities.
Now, how do we know this? I mean, is there any documentation we can go and find out about this?
Yeah, go on his website, and it explains all what he's doing to people with disabilities. And he took away their Medicaid, and he took away my Medicaid, and he stuck me on an HMO.
How did he take away your Medicaid?
Well, he didn't tell me, and then when I called Medicaid, they told me they took it away.
I'm a little confused.
They took away my Medicaid because I didn't use it, so they used my Medicare instead, and then they took it away from me without telling me. So my mom has to worry about my medications and stuff.
How old are you?
I'll be 41 next month.
Okay.
I live on my own. I'm independent through my parents and SSI.
Yeah, so you're on permanent disability, are you?
Yes.
Well, then, what I don't understand is how did the state cut your benefits, and what had that? What's the difference?
They only took away my Medicaid. They didn't cut my benefits. They just took away my Medicaid and put me on an HMO, Medicare Part D.
Well, is that all right or no?
No. Well, some of it's all right, but you know you have to pay co-payments and all that stuff, and then my mother has to dish out more money for me, and they live up north. But I'm doing pretty good. I'm independent, and I go out. I joined up Special Olympics. And I try to make a difference for other people.
Well, thank you for the call. We'll try and do some research on our end and see what we can come up with on the disability. Because if he's cutting it for you, I just don't see that he's not cutting it in other states too. But he does have it in there with the governor. You know, they probably get together over that little football game around Thanksgiving when he's eating pretzels and falling off couches and probably talking about let's see who we can cut benefits on next time. Yeah. Well, thanks for the call, Ron. I appreciate it. Hope things turn out for you. You know, we're waiting for Jonathan Alder to come on the line. It's actually getting pretty close to the next break. Justin, I think that we're going to have some difficulty there because we only have about 4 or 5 minutes to the next break. So yeah, there's some things that I want to get over. I've got a lot on my mind that I want to talk about today. Remember cut and run? Remember that slogan that the Republicans kept saying about Democrats and their desire to bring our service men and women home and how they criticized the Democrats and called it cut and run. Now, we haven't heard too much of that lately, and especially since the numero uno big dog in Iraq, General Casey, came up with the same suggestion. Oops. So it must be gratifying knowing that you can yell and dance about someone else's kids being in the fight as long as your kids stay snug at home and they never have to worry about going off to fight and die in the sand. Well, here's some questions that I have for the Chicken Hawks before they come back at the Dems, who just about everybody listening to this program wants us out of Iraq and wants us out of Iraq as quickly as we possibly can get out of there, including me. I mean, tomorrow night would be fine with me. I realize we can't get out by tomorrow night, so how about the day after? The sooner we get out, the better it is. But let's talk about cut and run. Who cut and ran in Korea? I mean, we ended up walking away on that, didn't we? Was it Dwight Eisenhower? Was he a Republican? Was he a Republican military man? And he told the nation that if he was elected, he'd go to Korea and end the war? Now, Harry Truman had won the war by September of 1950. Had he accepted the status quo, antebellum, tens of thousands of American lives would have been saved, and North Korea might not have been condemned to the isolationism that it's been experiencing since then.
Oh, most dangerous liberal in America. By God, you're talking about Korea. Talk about something a little more current.
Like Vietnam.
Who cut and ran in Vietnam? It's Richard Nixon. Forget the pictures of the American embassy in Saigon being evacuated by helicopters in 1975. The Vietnamese people who had come to depend upon us, we left them to the tender mercies of the Viet Cong. Remember, almost half of the 58,000 Americans who died in Vietnam did so on Nixon's watch? Should have gotten out in 69 as soon as he entered the White House. Cut and ran. Who was it that cut and ran after 241 American servicemen died in Beirut in the suicide bombing of the Marine barracks?
Ronald Reagan.
Now, the fact that Reagan pulled out wasn't the tragedy. The tragedy was that those Americans were put into an untenable position in the first place. And who cut and ran after the first Gulf War? Did George Bush, who refused to go in and annihilate Saddam Hussein's personal army when he had the chance? The other Bush not only pulled out, but on the way out, he invited the Kurds and the Shiites to overthrow their repressive dictator and said, we'll help you. And then the U.S. military stood by and watched Saddam's army rip the Kurds and Shiites to shreds. So when these Republican bastards out there yell that the Democrats want to cut and run, you remind them that in Korea, it was Eisenhower, the Republican, that cut and ran. In Vietnam, it was Richard Nixon, the Republican, who cut and ran. In Beirut, when 241 American servicemen were killed, blown up, it was Ronald Reagan, the Republican, who cut and ran. And in the Gulf War, when he had a chance to take out Saddam, who cut and ran there? Another Republican, George Bush. That's 4-0. Four wars, four Republicans, four cut and runs. And these bastards dare to say that when we want to pull out of Iraq on a war that was a complete and total mistake, that we want to cut and run? I don't think so. John Elliott, Majority Report, the Air America Radio Network. Way too much show to go. We're going to come back with Paul Krugman. Don't miss it.
Majority Report on Air America Radio. You're listening to AM 1320.
It's the best bike vacation ever. 3 days of cycling in the Sierra foothills, camping under the stars, catered gourmet meals, entertainment, and in-camp activities. It's the 20th annual Emigrant Trails Bike Trek, Friday, September 8th through Sunday, September 10th. This excellent adventure attracts over 400 bicycle riders and helps support Breathe California Sacramento's efforts to improve air quality in our area and to work to eliminate lung disease. Make your plans now and start raising much-needed funds by registering today at sacbreathe.org or by calling 916-444-5900. You can ride as an individual or put together a team of co-workers or friends. Travel at your own pace through stunning scenery, then relax in a camp with massage, yoga, or a beverage from the cantina. Free training rides prepare you for the best bike vacation ever. The 20th Annual Emigrant Trails Bike Trek, September 8th through September 10th. 3 days of cycling, camping, and fun. Go to sacbreathe.org or call 916-444-5900 and sign up today.
Before I, if you send messages, it's a loaded question. First of all, I admire Senator Kerry's service to our country.
If you send messages,
I admire the fact that he is a great dad. We're facing a.
If you send messages.
Let me finish. And so the answer to your question is, no doubt about it, it's tough. It's hard work.
I always consider myself the father of four boys, even though two of my sons are gone. Our twins, Kevin and Brian, died when their boat capsized. Bad weather, cold water, and the absence of life jackets contributed to their deaths. If I can help one person avoid the daily heartbreak that my wife and family must endure, then asking you to be responsible on your boat will be well worth my time. Visit BoatSmarter.com, and remember, if it's your boat, it's your responsibility.
The Internet. It's not something that you just dump something on. It's not a big truck. It's a series of tubes. Tubes. Why? Enormous tubes. Massive, massive tubes.
It really is the Internet consumer bill of rights.
Because you got tangled up with all of these things that are going on the Internet commercially. The world has turned against this. If your own personal Internet, that is you and me.
You and me is that
the problem. Tubes. The Internet is not something that you just dump something on. It's not a big truck.
Laughing at the truth. AM 1320.
It's a series of tubes.
The most dangerous liberal in America, John Elliott.
Welcome back to the Majority Report. Thanks for joining us tonight on the Air America Radio Network and wherever you are around the world, listening to us on the Internet and podcasting us. This gentleman is absolutely my favorite columnist, and I consider him to be, and he hates it when I say this because he's very modest, but he is, in my mind, the most significant and most important op-ed columnist in America today. He's a world-class economist and a professor at Princeton University, and a best-selling New York Times author, too. Paul Krugman, how are you, Paul?
I'm fine.
Good. The economy, you have been not, shall we say, doing a lot of interviews lately, and I really appreciate you taking some of your time to spend with us today. And I want to touch on Bush's chest beating last week or two about how the tax cuts in the economy have really worked and how he's had this number of 400-odd billion that it was supposed to be a deficit, and things are so much better now because it's in the $290 billion range. And you had an interesting take on that I'd like to share with our listeners.
Hello?
Yeah, hi.
Hi. Okay, well, here. First of all, there's two things. One is the I'm going to have a new diet plan, and the diet plan consists of at the beginning of every year, I'm going to say, "Oh my God, I'm going to gain 15 pounds this year," And then when I only gained 5 pounds, I'm going to say, see, my diet plan worked.
Your diet plan worked. You lost 10 pounds.
Their initial estimate of what the deficit was going to be was way above anybody else's. So it's, and they do this. They've done this now 3 years running. They announced this is going to be this huge deficit, and then they said, oh, look, it didn't turn out that bad, and they claim that that's a success. So a lot of it is just that.
Whereas if you said, can you try and balance the budget, and you came in at 290 zillion, trillion, billion dollars in a deficit, people would say, my God, that's awful mismanagement of our economy.
Yeah, that's right. So, I mean, this is an incredibly large deficit. It's not as bad as the Bush administration said it was going to be, and it's not quite as bad as other people who weren't deliberately trying to announce a high number so that the real number wouldn't look so bad, said. But it's still a terrible number.
It doesn't include the war, too, does it?
Yeah. Yes. Well, there's some in there, but it probably bigger than that. It's a little bit, the accounting is a bit harsh.
Now, if things are so grand in America, how come the middle class is constantly being eroded? How come our purchasing power is less? How come more and more people are working more and more jobs? What's going on?
Yeah, it's this amazing thing. If you look, I mean, I know that a lot of people, even economists, have a hard time accepting that it's really happening. But yeah, the economy's growth, the overall, the top-line number, is not bad. It's not spectacular the way they'd like to believe it, but it's not bad. But it's not trickling down. In fact, not only is it not trickling down, a large majority of the population is actually worse off this year than they were last year. If you look at the wages of the typical worker, they've fallen significantly behind inflation for several years running now, and particularly in the last year. So it's a situation, you know, profits are growing at an incredible pace, and that's a significant part of why the budget is not so bad as you might have expected because of the taxes on the profits, but it's not going to wages. Why is not that simple question to answer? I think it's no single thing, but here's the way I look at it. If you look at how America became a middle-class society in the first place,
right,
really it's something that happened under Franklin Delano Roosevelt and Harry Truman.
Sure.
It was a whole bunch of things. It was no one thing.
Well, unions were a component of that.
That's
because
right.
They forced management to share a little bit of the profits.
That's right. They provided a legal environment that allowed workers to form unions if they wanted. They gave protection to organizing, minimum wages, various kinds of social programs, unemployment insurance, things that gave workers more confidence, enhanced their bargaining power, increased their security, and the cumulative effect of all that stuff. There was a lot of kind of synergy in all of that. It all had the effect of really moving up the living standards of workers and the middle class, and at the expense of the rich, who faced much higher taxes. If you look at what's happening now, it's almost as if somebody is sitting there in the West Wing of the White House with a checklist of all the things that Roosevelt and Truman did to make this a more decent society, and said, "Okay, let's do the opposite."
Let me just interject a little there. I just have a question.
Yeah.
Just before you get to that. When you say, well, the rich, and this is going back to the Roosevelt-Truman era when the middle class was becoming affluent, that the rich paid a lot more in taxes. Now, did the rich cease to become rich, or did they at that point in time become less rich than they were?
Right, they became less rich than they were. It was not.
And so they were still rich.
That's right, but not.
Okay.
Yeah, and if you under the days of that socialist Dwight Eisenhower, the top tax rate was 91%. Think about that when people talk about how we need to have, and we had a booming economy. So
that's those tax and spend Democrats. Oh, I'm sorry, he wasn't a Democrat.
That's right. It was, effective corporate tax rates were much higher than they are now. So I have a favorite quote from FDR, where he said we've always known that the heedless pursuit of self-interest is morally wrong. It turns out to be bad economics, too. I think that's the moral for what's happening right now.
Oh, dear. So now let's talk about the minimum wage, because I think that is one of the reasons that is keeping the lower class really, really low and making sure that they are poor. My wife, the non-economist, said, why don't, other than the Republicans will never vote this in, John, but why don't you ask Paul whether or not if they tied the minimum wage to the consumer price index or the cost of living, and it was adjusted every year or every 3 years automatically, up or down, and we know it would be up, is that something that would go a long way, a little way to help, or not at all?
Well, it would stop the erosion. I mean, if you did it right now the minimum wage, once you adjust for inflation, the minimum wage is all the way back to where it was in 1955. So we've actually seen, you know, America is a vastly richer country than it was 50 years ago, but the minimum wage has eroded all the way back down to that level. So even if you did that now, all it would do is stop the erosion. But that would help. I mean, when I talk to political scientists, they say that the minimum wage is a classic case of where doing nothing can actually be an assault on workers. Because the way we've got it set up with, you know, prices rising 4% in the past year, and the minimum wage set in dollar terms, if Republican leadership in the Congress said, let's cut the minimum wage by 20 cents, they would not have a chance of getting that through. But they do have the power to just not raise the minimum wage, which means that inflation erodes it by the equivalent of more than 20 cents in the course of a year. And that's what's been happening.
What would they need to raise it to right now to make it zero? So there'd be a zero-sum game. So you're not going to lose anymore, but you're not necessarily going to get ahead. So you'd be treading water economically. What's that?
Well, right now we've got consumer price inflation over the past year is close to 4%. So it's you'd have to raise it 20 cents just this year to it's 5.15 an hour now. So you can do the arithmetic there. It's a bit over 20.
Right. So if you assume that that's a similar type progression since the last time it was raised 9 or 10 years ago, we're basically doubling that. We're somewhere in the $9 to $10 an hour range just to make sure that people can stay level and get ahead with the next year, right?
If it was keeping up with the level of productivity, we would have a minimum wage that would be something like $8-$9. And now, look, economists, you're a little worried. Too high a minimum wage does create some problems for employment. We're not in that range right now. There are other policies that are even
better.
What
type of problems? What type of problems, Paul?
Well, let's do the absurdity. Let's say a $30 an hour minimum wage. That clearly would create a lot of problems.
Sure.
$15 an hour, I might be a little bit nervous. $8 an hour, I don't think it's a problem. And the evidence says that where we are now, a minimum wage is just better for low-wage workers and doesn't really have any negatives. But, you know, no one wants to say that it's a cure-all, but it's something that can work.
Well, you know, if you also take a look at the cost of living and you take a look at the minimum wage that we're talking about, and if you say that you take that number and increase it enough so people can survive, that's something that the business community, the Chamber of Commerce, and especially the service industries, like the restaurant industry and the retail industry, they clamor and say, we'll go out of business. Well, I don't believe them for a minute. They won't go out of business. They'll do what everybody else does, including the oil companies. And when costs go up, they pass along the cost to the consumer. If that happens, does that slow down buying by a lot, a little, or not at all?
A little. It's a very small...
So it's negligible.
Yeah, it's negligible. I mean, compared with everything else that's out there, and remember, it reduces the buying power of some people, but it increases the buying power of the people being paid minimum wage or a little bit above, and they are the ones who, you know, they will spend more. So this is not a big problem. It's probably, if anything, a positive, and it's the first simplest thing you could do, and it says volumes about our politics that it's not happening.
Well, especially considering those rascals in Congress have given themselves $33,000 a year in raises since...
That's a great debating point. I mean, I'm not sure that, you know, the problem with America isn't that our congressmen are overpaid in their congressional salaries. The problem is the money they get that isn't part of their salary.
Yeah, that's an interesting point right there. Tom DeLay excluded from that, of course. Ben Bernanke, I saw that when he was appointed to head up the Federal Reserve, that you were reservedly optimistic. You did issue the disclaimer that the reason that you're at Princeton University is in the economics department is he brought you there and made you the offer and lured you there. So certainly there's some personal attachment and loyalty there. But what did you think he was going to do? How's he been doing so far, and what do you think?
He's had a little bit of a rocky time, but it's all really just communication stuff. And my great concern has been, the thing that worries me is that he might be so anxious to prove himself to be a genuine central banker. Central bankers are supposed to be hard and flinty and so concerned with fighting inflation that they don't worry about, you know, like jobs, that he might be so concerned to try and prove that he would be excessively tight. He may have done that a bit, but he's less so than I might have feared. I have to say that he was handed on as sort of a poison chalice from Greenspan.
Yeah.
A lot of stuff that clearly was looming as a problem. You know, Greenspan managed to delay the payment until after he was gone, and I do not. I think I can say with absolute honesty that I do not envy Ben Bernanke that position right now. I would.
There's not too many positions in the federal government at all that I would envy anybody for having them. Although I think he's a lot more qualified than the majority of people in the Bush administration.
I mean, I think of Bernanke. I mean, he may not be the, you know, we have yet to see, but I think of him as basically the gift of Hurricane Katrina and Harriet Myers. He was appointed at just a moment when Bush had no choice but to actually hire somebody who knew the job.
Yes, a competent individual,
yeah.
Somebody that could actually do the job. Which brings me to this question, speaking of jobs. Notice this cunning segue here.
Yeah.
You'd mentioned Bernanke and the concern maybe about jobs. You were the person that taught me we need to have somewhere around 130,000, 135,000 jobs every single month created just to handle the number of people coming into the workforce in
right.
America. So that when the Republicans tout we got 100,000 new jobs last month, that's actually a negative 30 or 35. How's your scorecard been running since this marvelous tax cut benefits have come in? How have they been doing?
Yeah, it's basically been, if you look at the whole thing over the 36 months or so that they like to look at, since the summer of 2003, job growth has roughly kept up with the population, maybe a bit ahead, but not nearly enough to make up for the really terrible 2 years that went before. So if you're asking, you know, is this a good job market? The answer is every number except for one, which is the official unemployment rate, says no. It's clearly a market in which jobs are not that easy to find, better than they were in the summer of 2003, but nothing like the summer of 1999. And it's it's not good enough. And the proof of the pudding, in a way, is the fact that wages are continuing to lag so far behind inflation. If we had a good job market, employers would be bidding up wages, and that's not happening.
No. You also taught me to pick up my mail with tongs, and I trust that you're still doing that occasionally.
Yeah, although these days they want to execute Bill Keller, not me. So.
I see.
I have a little bit of cover.
What's in your column tomorrow? What are we looking forward to in the New York Times?
It's about the revenge of George Orwell.
I can't wait. Paul Krugman, it's always great to talk to you, sir. Thanks a million for taking your time on a Thursday evening with us.
Sure.
John Elliott on the Majority Report with the great Paul Krugman. We'll be taking a break. We're coming right back, and we're going to be giving ourselves a drum roll because we want to give you the results of two new polls that have come out today. Don't go away.
You're listening to Sam Cedar and Janine Garofalo on The Majority Report, the world's most majoritized radio.
A liberal dose of the truth.
so hot today in New York City that naked guy on the subway was screaming, "Who's crazy now?" Hot down in Washington, D.C., Dick Cheney replaced his pacemaker with an ice maker. Is that hot? It's so hot, Christy Brinkley is now dating Ben and Jerry.
Whoa!
It's so hot today, ladies and gentlemen, George W. Bush told Al Roker to stop doing that. That's what he said. That's what President Bush said at the G8 summit. He was overheard using a dirty language at the G8 summit. And not only that, later he was ejected for headbutting.
Whoa!
Yeah.
Laughing at the truth. AM 1320.
Hey, listen up. What about your future? Are you unhappy with your current job? You want to make great money and get the promotion you deserve? Now's the time. Explore your options. Log on to stackjobs.com and post your resume today. That's stackjobs.com. Post your resume and have local employers find you now. New companies being added each day and hundreds of jobs being added each week. So if you're in the market for a job, stackjobs.com is a click away. At stackjobs.com, you're on your way to a better day.
These are troubled times. We have to think our way out. We can't faith our way out. It's not a coincidence that so much of Bush's base are faith people, because Bush works in mysterious ways. It helps to have faith. It really does. But religion, it stops people from thinking because they think all the answers are in that one book. It impedes progress. It justifies crazy people. Flying planes into a building was a faith-based initiative. Matters of otherwise common sense become points of debate. Like gay marriage, would we even be having this discussion about whether gay people can marry except for religion? Of course the Catholic Church doesn't want gay men to marry. Half the priesthood would walk out the door the first day and marry the UPS driver.
Some time off, sitting in for Sam Cedar, John Elliott, the most dangerous liberal in America.
Yes, two new polls out today. May we have a drum roll, maestro?
Well, here's the fun part. The fun part is that I know that we have two new polls out today, and they're really good. In fact, we just don't need a drum roll. We should probably have something a little more significant, like a fanfare. Do we have a fanfare? Oh, yeah. Republicans are waking up to some discouraging news today. Two new polls, one from CBS, NYT, which is New York Times, of course, and one from NBC, WSJ, Wall Street Journal, which, of course, is a Republican magazine newspaper. They show Democrats are in great shape less than 4 months before the election day. Well, Peter Hart, who conducted the NBC Wall Street Journal poll, summed it up well by saying, "I feel like Republicans are in a barrel and headed towards Niagara Falls, and are in a python-like grip in terms of a negative mood." Here's the numbers. In the congressional vote, in both polls, Dems lead by 10. 48-38 for Congress, according to the NBC Wall Street Journal, and the CBS New York Times, 45-35. That's among registered voters. Now, if you ask independents, Democrats actually hold a 12-point lead, which is really, really good, because it's usually independents, ladies and gentlemen, that actually swing the elections. According to CBS New York Times poll, 33% of Americans say that their vote in the midterms will be a vote against Bush. Why? I don't get it. The guy, he's doing such a... It's a tough job. It's hard work. You know what? I don't think he's going to be going back to his ranch in Crawford this August. I don't think he'll be spending the whole month there. I think he'll be out electioneering. Only 14% people said that they're going to actually come out to the polls to support Bush.
independent voters say by a 19-vote margin, their November vote will be a vote against Bush. One out of five independents are voting against Bush, as in that dog is running over there, the one, the scruffy-looking one with the collar, Spike. Yeah, I'm fine. Yeah, okay, I'll vote for Spike. It's an ABBA. It's Bush's Waterloo. It's ABBA. It's anybody but Bush again. The NBC Wall Street Journal reinforces these findings with 38% of the voters saying the midterm vote will be a signal of opposition to George Bush. 4 out of 10 people are going to the polls for the specific reason of saying, that's it, voting against Bush. 51% of voters have an unfavorable review, view of the Republican Party, and only 18% will be casting the midterm vote in order to keep the GOP in power. 60% disapprove of the Congress led by the Republicans. It should be called the Republicans. According to the CBS New York Times poll, Americans trust Democrats to make the right decisions about the war in Iraq by a 6-point margin, and they trust Democrats on the economy by a 12-point margin. Now, the right decision on the war that the Democrats would make is to get the hell out! It's the Majority Report. John Elliott on the Air America Radio Network. We'll be right back after the top of the hour. Bill, I'm going to answer your question. Andy, Steve, if you'd like to speak with us, 866-303-2270. Don't move. We're coming right back.
Hey, you streaming listeners, open your media player and click on the link to nohagglemortgage.com right now, and you can save thousands on your mortgage loan. Simple, easy, and takes less than 30 seconds. For the first time, homeowners can now have direct access to the same rates that mortgage brokers get. That's right, the same rates that mortgage brokers get. Three things allow nohagglemortgage.com to get the lowest mortgage rates in the industry. One, no commissions to pay loan officers. Two, most of the work is done over the internet, saving you a lot of money. 3. No haggling. Click on the link now, then click on Quick Quote to find out what rate you can get. Get your money faster and save thousands. No gimmicks, no middleman, no haggling. Just simple, fast, friendly, low-rate mortgage loans. Skip the loan officer. Go direct to nohagglemortgage.com. You're already online. Take 30 seconds and find out for yourself. Or go to nohagglemortgage.com. Check it out today. Licensed by the DOC.
You're listening to AM 1320 KCTC.
Sacramento.
Sacramento's left channel. Because you deserve the truth.
CBS News, I'm Cammie McCormick.
I would like to be assumed innocent until proven guilty.
American Floyd Landis, winner of the Tour de France after he tested positive for high testosterone. CBS News correspondent Armin Katayan.
When you wear that yellow jersey signifying the overall leader of the race, you are tested after every stage, and then you are tested again when you win a stage, meaning Floyd was tested at least a half a dozen times during this tour, making this news all the more stunning.
Landis has been suspended from his team for now. Barry Bonds' trainer was in federal court today in San Francisco. He was ordered to testify about allegations against Bonds of perjury and tax evasion. He has refused to answer questions and was jailed once before. Colorado authorities think they've got a serial killer on their hands, already behind bars, but admitting to 48 killings aside from the one he's serving time for.
At this point, we have 7 that are cooperated and 41 that we haven't been able to, and they spread of a time period from 1970 up through 1995.
El Paso County Sheriff Terry Makita says Robert Charles Brown has confessed to killings in 9 states. He says Brown could be exaggerating, but they're following up just in case. The fighting in the Middle East claimed the lives of 5 Palestinians in Gaza today, and in Lebanon, the Israelis kept up the pressure from the air. They're also preparing for more ground battles, as CBS News correspondent Dan Revive reports.
Prime Minister Ehud Olmert and other senior ministers in what's become the war cabinet authorized the army to call up to 30,000 reserve soldiers to active duty. The military said it won't activate that many right away, but fresh troops may be needed in Lebanon because the combat there has been intense, soldiers exhausted.
Israel's cabinet did not, however, approve an expanded war with Hezbollah that might include a major ground invasion. The UN Security Council approved a statement today expressing shock and distress at Israel's bombing of a UN outpost in Lebanon, in which 4 observers were killed. The U.S. insisted that any wording suggesting condemnation for the attack or that it was deliberate be dropped. Israel's U.N. Ambassador Dan Gillerman called the statement fair.
This is the right thing to do, both in memory of the people who were killed doing their duty and also as a concern of the international community.
Authorities in California now say the heat wave there could be responsible for 90 deaths. Oil giant ExxonMobil earned more than $10.3 billion last quarter, profits that have many drivers seeing red.
We see Exxon showing incredible profits at a time when we see some of the highest gas prices we've ever seen in the nation. It seems like they go hand in hand, don't they?
Brad Proctor of GasPriceWatch.com, the profits were the second highest ever for a U.S. company. New home sales were down in June for the first time in 4 months, even as mortgage rates dipped slightly. And on Wall Street, the Dow finished off by 2. This is CBS News.
The following is an OnStar conversation.
OnStar emergency, this is Donnell.
We need an ambulance. We're both hurt. My kids feel my leg.
Every month, OnStar offers help in thousands of emergencies.
Okay, I have a contact emergency service at this time.
Dispatch.
Yes, this is Donna with OnStar. I have a vehicle crash with injuries. I can conversation with the vehicle.
Hello, how are you injured? What happened?
I can't feel my leg. Oh, please help me.
We'll get police and paramedics on the way.
Emergency services have been contacted, and I will remain on the line until they arrive.
He's all right in front of me.
The peace of mind OnStar offers is more affordable than you might think.
Emergency services are at the scene of the accident.
They're here. Okay, thank you.
The first year of OnStar service is included on new OnStar-equipped GM vehicles, and unlimited use of all safety and security services costs only $16.95 plus tax per month after that. OnStar by GM. To experience OnStar, press your blue button or visit OnStar.com.
Can testing your DNA at home give you clues into what diseases you might get? The government doesn't think so.
A congressional investigation of 14 companies that sell do-it-yourself DNA kits concludes many give meaningless information, and some tried to sell consumers expensive customized supplements that essentially were grocery store vitamin pills. These kits usually have a customer take a swab from inside the cheek and send it to a lab for analysis. The Government Accountability Office probe found the tests were not clinically valid. The FDA is investigating.
Correspondent John Harchie. Cindy Sheehan and other anti-war protesters often found it difficult to get near the president's ranch to demonstrate. Now they're guaranteed a spot. She's taken the insurance money she received after her son was killed in Iraq and bought property in Crawford, Texas. It's about 7 miles from the Bush ranch. Sheehan said in an email that they'll use the space until Mr. Bush's resignation or impeachment. I'm Cammie McCormick, CBS News.
The Morning Retort with Scott and Sam.
To understand it.
Mitt Romney.
What drives people?
Massachusetts governor. If he can't protect his own citizens from tunnels, how will he protect you from terrorists? Done. Campaign is dead. See how easy it was?
It was that easy.
See, that's the problem on the left. You're the problem right there. You think you get all the answers to all the little questions that does not drive a lot of people outside of California, outside of both coasts, outside of California and New York. Northeast. I mean, this is not the world. This is not the center of the universe, Mr. Sims.
Mitt Romney gets the nomination. The tunnels win.
Think about it. Taurus, Terra, Earth, tunnels.
Do the math, Scott!
It's very erotic. I'm being turned on by all this talk.
Scott and Sam's mornings, 5:30 to 9 on AM 1320, Sacramento's Left Channel.
Majority Report with John Elliott. How are you?
I am feeling really, really good.
I'm in San Diego. I do a show here at KLSD, the Air America affiliate in San Diego, on weekends. And this week, well, actually, after the show today, I'm heading to the airport. I'm taking the red eye. Heading to New York. Going to see some people that I know back in New York. I'm going to hang out with the Air America folks. I'm going to do this show live from Air America tomorrow. And on Saturday morning, I'm flying up to Boston. And I'm going to do my show from Fenway Park with the glitterati of New England Democrats such as Congressman Richard Neal and former Governor Mike Dukakis. We have the mayor of Boston on, probably Larry Lucchino, the president of the Boston Red Sox. Sort of like me going on vacation and taking you along with me. We can hang out. What do you think? You know, on the chat room, I was just on the chat room. If you want to go on the chat room, go to johntalk.com, J-O-N-T-A-L-K, johntalk.com. Click on chat, and there's a teenager on the chat. And she wanted to know if I will take a call from her. And the answer is I will. So, teenager, when you call, you identify yourself to Carmen that you are that specific teenager that I spoke with on the chat room. And tell her what you want to talk about. Tell her where you're calling from. We'll put you on. Ah, lots of shows. I mean, you know, there's so much. You know, President Bush today signed the Renewal of the Voting Rights Act. Signed it into law today. Don't you love it? Black people got a right to vote, and I'm signing this law to make sure that they have that right to vote. The fact that my dad actually voted against it in 1965, the very act that we are voting to renew, I'm not going to tell you that. Daddy must have had his reasons, but I'm not a racist. That's why there are so many Republican African Americans in Congress. You add the sum total of Republican senators in Congress to the sum total of Republican congressmen that are African American to the sum total of African American women, and you get a zero-sum game. And I mean, as soon as Julius Caesar Watts left, they were down to none. Who was the last African-American member of Congress before J.C. Watts of Oklahoma? I'm sorry, Republican. Yes, I mean Republican. Go ahead. It's a quiz. Kathy. Texas, how are you?
Hi, John. It's Kathy.
How are you?
Good. I'm the teenager from the chat room.
Oh, excellent.
So, yeah.
Do you have your radio on?
Pardon me?
Do you have your radio on?
I shut it.
Yeah, could you turn your radio down?
I did. I shut it off.
Okay, good.
Okay. So, the reason that I wanted to call is when you were talking before about how all the different presidents who cut and run.
Right.
That they were all Republicans. What I want to know is I am, I listen to Air America all the time, and I didn't know that. And, like, I'm too young to vote and stuff, but why weren't the Democrats saying that in the national elections? Why weren't they, like, why didn't Kerry say it? Why didn't somebody, you know, like, debate say that?
Two reasons. One, they didn't think of it. Secondly, it's not... Let me try and put it to you this way, Kathy. The idea of cutting and running isn't really cutting and running because you're a chicken and you're running away. You know, clearly Eisenhower made the right decision in the Korean War. Nixon made the right decision in the Vietnam War. He should have done it earlier. And the same thing with, you know, I mean, we point these things out to say that, hey, don't point the finger at Democrats and say, hey, Democrats, you guys are chicken. You're cutting and running. You're hanging everybody out to dry. It's a policy of the American government that has happened in previous wars. And all I was pointing out is it's happened before.
And the people that actually partook, managed it, Kathy, were the ones that happened to be Republicans at the time. I'm not criticizing them for doing it. I'm criticizing the fact that if you want to call us cutting and running because we want to come out of Iraq and save more American lives, then we need to point out that that's exactly what your side has been doing. And these are the guys that you honor. I mean, Ronald Reagan is almost a saint to these people. They, you know, they want a monument. They want to put him on a coin, for God's sake. They want to put him on a dollar bill. They want to put him on Mount Rushmore. I mean, this is a guy that effectively eliminated the middle class. Back before Ronald Reagan got elected, if a mother wanted to stay home and be a stay-at-home mom, she could, and the family could exist on what dad made and have a very nice middle-class life. Well, he effectively eliminated the middle classes with his trickle-down economics, and as a result of that, they were not in, you know, people are not in any position now if you want to have a very good middle-class life. Both mom and dad have to work, unless you're really, really wealthy.
Yeah. Well,
what are you going to do? I am so delighted that you're calling the program. I know that you're not old enough to vote. I'm so excited that
Sarge
you are actually...
Sarge and Nathan got me to listen to you on the weekend.
Pardon?
Sarge and Nathan got me to listen to you on the weekend.
Oh, did they really?
Uh-huh.
I am so thrilled that a teenager is excited about politics and concerned enough about her country, because this is... You know, we're doing this for you.
Let me ask you another question, then.
Sure.
Because I'm starting high school. I'm 14. I start high school in 19 days.
Okay.
And, my high school doesn't have any political clubs. It doesn't have any kind of organizations that are about politics or about learning, you know, learning to influence our leaders or protest and stuff like that. And I want to start something. So what do you think would be the best kind to start?
Well, I think the first thing you shouldn't do is start one right away, because you're going to go in as a freshman, and people always look at freshmen as, you know, here come the new kids. So you need to get your feet wet, you need to get acclimated into school, and you need to be really comfortable with your environment. Then you need to find out if there's some two or three or four other people in your class, or maybe a class above you, that are interested, and then you need to go to the people in the government of the school. Go to your student government and say, look, we'd like to start a division maybe of the student government and start a group where we can have political discussions, free flow of political discussions, and just call it a political group. It doesn't have to be Democrats or Republicans. It can just be people learning about politics. Sort of a civics class run by kids where, you know, everybody can take a turn in talking about politics, and I guarantee you will have tremendous support in the community. You will find people at the civic level, whether it's a mayor or alderman or city council person, will come and speak to the class and tell them a little bit about what they do and how they can get involved. And then you can reach out and touch your congressman and have your congressman come in, and maybe even your state senators and your senators.
Yeah, our previous congressman came into the middle school once. I saw him at the middle school, but then they redistricted, and now he's somewhere else.
Yeah, I'm sure. There's a book you should pick up, and it's by Ben Barnes, and it's called Burning Barnes, Barnes Burning, or something like that. But Ben Barnes was the former lieutenant governor of the state of Texas. He was the youngest speaker of the House. And his specific cause in getting involved right now in writing this book is to get young people like you involved in politics. He told me that he felt that, yeah, global warming is important, yeah, the tax rate is important, yeah, health care is important, yeah, good education is important, but there's nothing more important right now than getting young people involved in politics, because they're the ones that can do something about it and they're the ones that can shape the future. I'm really delighted that you're on our chat room and you listen to me on weekends, and that as long as your schoolwork doesn't suffer. I don't want your schoolwork to suffer.
And then for the summer, my brother's my guardian, because my mom's in jail. But anyway, my brother said that I couldn't spend the whole summer just at the pool doing nothing, and that I can't be all talk and no action, so I had to go and do something in politics, since it's something I care about. So I spent a month working for Chris Bell, who is running for governor as a Democrat in Texas.
That's amazing. What part of Texas do you live in?
Just north of Austin.
Okay. So you're in the... I'll give you a little piece of Texas humor that I heard. I was talking to Molly Ivins. I'm sure you know who Molly Ivins is. I was talking to her manager. It's a lady by the name of Betsy Moon. And when you call Betsy Moon, you start off and you say a couple of things like, hi, how are you? And then you sit back and she'll tell you how terrible things are with the Bush administration. And she'll just go on and on and on. She's a hoot. So I finally said to her, Betsy, if you feel this way, why do you live in Texas? She said, oh, John, I don't live in Texas. I live in Austin. I could never live in Texas. Thanks for the call, Kathy. I really appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
But, oh, man, this is why I do this show. This is what makes me feel great about the future. This is what makes me feel good about America. There's hope. There's hope out there with people like Kathy, who's 14, who's not even in high school yet, who's active involved in politics and donating some time and working with her Democratic candidate for governor. Wow. That's why we do this. That's why there's hope. That's why we're going to win. People like that. We have to do it for people like her. I got a whole bunch of calls lined up. Bill, I'm going to take your call and answer your question. I know you've got one. Andy, Steve, Charlie, Chris, I'll be right back to you. I'm going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back on the Majority Report with John Elliott on the Air America Radio Network. Do not go away.
The Majority Report with Janine Garofalo and Sam Cedar.
I know that.
On Air America Radio.
It's Enid Live, weekday afternoon.
It's the best bike vacation ever. 3 days of cycling in the Sierra foothills, camping under the stars, catered gourmet meals, entertainment, and in-camp activities. It's the 20th annual Emigrant Trails Bike Trek, Friday, September 8th through Sunday, September 10th. This excellent adventure attracts over 400 bicycle riders and helps support Breathe California Sacramento's efforts to improve air quality in our area and to work to eliminate lung disease. Make your plans now and start raising much-needed funds by registering today at sacbreathe.org or by calling 916-444-5900. You can ride as an individual or put together a team of co-workers or friends. Travel at your own pace through stunning scenery, then relax in a camp with massage, yoga, or a beverage from the cantina. Free training rides prepare you for the best bike vacation ever. The 20th Annual Emigrant Trails Bike Trek, September 8th through September 10th. 3 days of cycling, camping, and fun. Go to sacbreathe.org or call 916-444-5900 and sign up today.
America.
greatest liberal in America, John Elliott.
Air America Radio Network, the Majority Report, John Elliott, Thursday evening. How are you? The alarm clock for your political soul, the air conditioning for your soul. Bill, Phoenix, Arizona, calling in, you're asking a question.
Hi, John.
The question
Elliott.
Is, John, how are you, Elliott? Bill? I talked to you 2 nights ago, and we talked about a little red badge of courage that we would wear. We would take a safety pin, put a little piece of red cloth, and we would wear it over our hearts. And then when people would ask, we would be able to tell them why we wear that. We're going to wear it until the war ends, until people come home. And I said, I'm going to do that. And then you called me yesterday, and I said, I didn't do it. So now you're calling today to say, okay, now here's the difference between me and all the guys on the right. All the guys on the right would say, oh, yeah, sure I have it on, knowing that this is radio. I was running around today trying to get ready for the overnight flight, and I forgot. I don't have it on, but I will. And I will be wearing it. I will be wearing it when you talk to me tomorrow from New York.
Am I talking?
And I will actually have people in New York in the studio with me at Air America, including Lady Carmen, and including wonder producer extraordinaire Justin, who are going to be able to say, yeah, he's wearing that red badge, man. So I'm working on it. But at least I'm telling you the truth. Thanks for the call, Bill. Chris, Manhattan, New York, how are you? Welcome to the Majority Report with John Elliott. How are you doing?
Hey, John, good man. Good work on the air. A couple of comments.
Thank you.
One, on this cut-and-run stuff. One, I think you're being...
Isn't it nonsense?
I'm sorry?
Isn't it nonsense?
Well, a couple things. First comment is, I think you're being a little too kind to the Democratic Party. I'm terribly disappointed in the Democratic Party as an entity overall, because I think they've had no incisive leadership in recent years and haven't presented themselves well. And to say they, you know, forgot to mention this, I just don't think they're doing their homework well, and they need to improve. So let's say that outright.
Let me tell you, I agree with you. I absolutely, totally agree with you. I think there's been a leadership void since Bill Clinton left. And I think that there are some people out there that could lead, but for some reason they don't get the traction. Let me tell you about what Tom Daschle told me back a couple of years ago. I said to him, you know, and I said this on air, I said, you know, Senator, you're the majority leader, and this is when we were in the majority, and we had just lost the midterm, he was back in the minority. And I said, you know, everybody says, what are you guys doing? You never hear anything. You don't seem to be standing up for anything. And he said, you know, I have to tell you that it would appear that way, and if I was out there as a constituent, I would feel the same way. And he said, but I'm telling you, we're in here fighting. The problem is we don't control anything. And when the president whispers, he's got a megaphone, and when we yell, it's a whisper. So it's really, he's got control of the media, and the way they've manipulated the media has been quite masterful. And they took this car out for a spin in Austin before he became president. And what they would do is they would give special access to certain people at the governor's press corps. And they've now taken that over to the White House press corps. And the way it works is, if you're the White House correspondent for, let's say, the Boston Globe, you have access. Your job is to get a story out of the White House. You want to get the scoop. You want to get a good story. You want to get it accurate. And you want to get it out there before everybody else. Well, if you don't play ball with them, and if you criticize them, then they Dixie-chick you, or they Helen Thomas you and put you in the back row. They then deny you access. You don't get invited on Air Force One. The other guys do. And then you find that your counterparts at the St. Louis Post-Dispatch and the San Francisco Chronicle and the Miami newspaper, Miami Herald, they've got a story that you should have had, and your editor says to you, what the hell were you doing? It's, well, like, they wouldn't let me in. Why? Because I wasn't writing what they wanted. Well, they're going to replace you with somebody else who is. So what you have is a compliant press corps. So when you own the media, and this Republican White House, I have to tell you, Chris, they look at the media as a constituency. They look at them the way they look at the religious right. They look at them as the way they look at big business. They are one single component in their cog, and they play them like a fiddle. Now,
adroit comments, John, and let's just jump for the sake of time economy onto the other part of the issue.
Sure.
The concept of the cut and run thing, I think that you've dug into very well. Let's look at history. If you go back to the history we studied in grade school and high school of European wars and conquest and stuff going back to Charlemagne 800 and the 1100s, 1200s, 1300s, back in the days when the world was smaller, what wars were about was taking over territory and resources and trying to subjugate a society to annex it. And for a period of time, people back in those ancient days thought it worked. But now the world and the cultures all over the globe are too developed. You can't go in, as time has shown, the Russian breakup of its empire attempts and the British Empire breakup. You can't take a well-developed culture with a history, language, and grouping of people and subjugate it and annex it. It doesn't hold. It doesn't work. So what wars amount to today is a fighting till exhaustion and a negotiated settlement. So the idea of cut and run is totally moot.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And it's just a cute little phrase that the Republicans, who are, again, oh so masterful at these marvelous phrases, you know, they come up with flip-flop and all these things, and cut and run is a very nice thing to say to try and disparage the Democrats when, of course, and then immediately when General Casey comes out and proposes the same thing, it's whoops. Thanks for the call, Chris. Really appreciate it. Charlie, Brooklyn, New York, how are you? Welcome to the Majority Report. You're on with John Elliott. How you doing?
Hey, John. Great show. You know,
thanks,
I woke up this morning to the radio reporting ExxonMobil and BP's profits for this past quarter. And made me think of a quote that I had read earlier in the week from Anatole France. This is 1894. He said, "The poor have to labor in the face of the majestic equality of the law, which forbids the rich as well as the poor to sleep under bridges, to beg in the streets, and to steal bread." And it reminded me so much of the kind of way Bush bandies about the word democracy, majestic equality of the law. This unprecedented lawlessness, the bullying, the recklessness of what they do. And the oil companies, here we are, paying the highest prices we've ever paid for gasoline. My electric bill is double what it was.
Charlie, I'm going to have to run. I've got Scott Ritter coming, but you're absolutely right. $10.3 billion for Exxon. It used to be 10.7, so they've lost $400 million this past quarter. Hey, Charlie, sorry to have to cut you off, man. It's the Majority Report. John Elliott being right back with Scott Ritter.
The Majority Report on Air America Radio.
It's the Morning Retort with...
It's the best bike vacation ever. 3 days of cycling in the Sierra foothills, camping under the stars, catered gourmet meals, entertainment, and in-camp activities. It's the 20th annual Emigrant Trails Bike Trek, Friday, September 8th through Sunday, September 10th. This excellent adventure attracts over 400 bicycle riders and helps support Breathe California Sacramento's efforts to improve air quality in our area and to work to eliminate lung disease. Make your plans now and start raising much-needed funds by registering today at sacbreathe.org or by calling 916-444-5900. You can ride as an individual or put together a team of co-workers or friends. Travel at your own pace through stunning scenery, then relax in a camp with massage, yoga, or a beverage from the cantina. Free training rides prepare you for the best bike vacation ever. The 20th Annual Immigrant Trails Bike Trek, September 8th through September 10th. 3 days of cycling, camping, and fun. Go to sacbreeze.org or call 916-444-5900 and sign up today.
Lifetime of Can't Forget. Because I survived, I can tell you how important it is to be responsible on your boat. Visit BoatSmarter.com and remember, if it's your boat, it's your responsibility.
The fact that somebody like Rush Limbaugh, who has made a career preaching that anybody who does drugs has got to go right to jail, do not pass go, no questions asked, right to jail, gets caught doing 30 OxyContin a day. 30 OxyContin? Do you have any idea how high that is? I don't, and I've been pretty high. But, wow. This guy is putting up Elvis numbers, ladies and gentlemen. But how does he get away with it? They say, well, he's on medication. Oh, see, that's not drugs. You know what, pal? We all got our medication, don't we? They can have an ad on TV that said, ask your doctor if Jack Daniels is right for you. And it would not be out of place thematically.
The odds of you being killed by a terrorist are practically zero. So I say relax and enjoy the show. You have to be a realist. You have to be realistic about terrorism. Certain groups of people, certain groups, Muslim fundamentalists, Christian fundamentalists, Jewish fundamentalists, and just plain guys from Montana, are going to continue to make life in this country very interesting for a long, long time. That's the reality. Angry men in combat fatigues talking to God on a two-way radio and muttering incoherent slogans about freedom are eventually going to provide us with a great deal of entertainment, especially after your stupid economy collapses all around you and the terrorists come out of the woodwork. You'll have anthrax in the water supply, the sarin gas in your air conditioners. There'll be chemical and biological suitcase bombs in every city. And I say, enjoy it. Relax. Enjoy the show. Take a chance. Put a little fun in your life.
The Bank of...
Hey, listen up. What about your future? Are you unhappy with your current job? You want to make great money and get the promotion you deserve? Now's the time. Explore your options. Log on to sackjobs.com and post your resume today. That's sackjobs.com. Post your resume and have local employers find you now. New companies being added each day and hundreds of jobs being added each week. So if you're in the market for a job, sackjobs.com is a click away. At sackjobs.com, you're on your way to a better day.
Now, back to the most dangerous liberal in America, John Elliott.
Welcome back. Majority Report on the Air America Radio Network. Thanks for spending part of your Thursday evening with us. I'm going to introduce you to a great American. I first had the privilege of talking to Scott Ritter back in 2003. This is a gentleman who is a Republican, who served with great distinction in the United States for the United States servicemen, fought in Gulf War I, voted for George Bush in 2000, traveled to Iraq as a UN weapons inspector. In fact, he was the point guy on the existence of WMDs. When the run-up to the Iraqi war started and the Bush administration started talking about it, he became quite disillusioned with his president and his leadership because they were not telling it the way it was. And he was on just about every possible talk show for about, my recollection, Scott, is you were out there for about a month, and then you were just persona non grata because you weren't telling them what they wanted to hear.
Well, I think I was on a little bit longer than that. I think there was a run from September 2002 until January 2003.
Right.
And then, you're absolutely correct. The administration, and I would say certain elements of what we can euphemistically call mainstream media, were finding my message a little too inconvenient.
Yeah, I think inconvenience is a very nice way of phrasing it. When we met when you were doing a book signing here in San Diego. There's another occasion we were talking, and you said at that point in time you felt that the biggest threat to world peace resided at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. You still feel that way?
No, there can be no doubt about it. I mean, when we take a look at the world today, you know, there are considerable problems out there, and not all of which are, you know, made in the USA. I'm not somebody who sits there and says, you know, America is the sole source of all that ails the world.
No.
Far from it. But, you know, if, for instance, now we hear talk that coming out of Israel and certain elements of the United States, that what's happening, what's transpiring in Lebanon today is World War III. What an absurdity. It's not World War III. It's a tragically, you know, overblown, and what I mean by that, you know, to call what's happening in Lebanon World War III is absurd. What's happening in Lebanon is the Israeli, you know, the might of the Israeli military being, you know, brought to bear on a guerrilla, slash terrorist organization, however you want to call them. But to link that to World War III is absurd, and this is part of the problem. There are many problems in the world today, but the only nation that can cause global disharmony and global destruction is the United States. And the United States is doing nothing to create harmony and peace. We're going around the world and we're creating disharmony and violence. We are the number one cause of death and destruction from military action in the world today. And
isn't that something that you just have to shake your head and say, you look at our proud history and where we've been as a nation and all the good that we've accomplished, and, you know, World War II coming to the aid of the Europeans and really making the world a better place and standing up, as the cartoons say, and Superman for truth, justice, and the American way. Where did we go wrong, and when did we lose our footing on this?
Well, I mean, some would say that we've had the potential of going wrong for some time. I mean, you know, you talk about, you know, some of the issues that drive, you know, this desire for global dominance that resides in America today in certain segments of American society. You know, some say it goes back to, you know, manifest destiny, to the landing of Plymouth Rock, thinking that God graced only those who reside in the, you know, in the territory of what we now call the United States of America, as, you know, as if the Lord Almighty blessed 300 million people, but not the several billion others who reside on the earth today. The fact that we have built a lifestyle, you know, an addictive one, it's a nice lifestyle, that requires us to gain access to, you know, the world resources that we don't control, and yet we dictate with the rest of the world how, you know, how they're supposed to coexist with us, how they're supposed to give us their resources, as if the oil that resides underneath Saudi soil somehow says made in the USA on it. You know, what's happening today in the last several decades is a lot of the imbalances that existed with the American versus the world relationship that didn't come to a head because, you know, there was still room to grow in the world, whatever, are coming to a head now. And we're coming face to face with the fact that, in many ways, America, as we know it today, is incompatible with the rest of the world. And I think that's what's happening, is our politicians, if we're brutally honest about this, whether you're a Democrat or a Republican, our politicians, by and large, are simply feeding the addiction. We get the foreign policy we, the people, ask for. We don't sit there and say go to war with the rest of the world, but we do demand oil at a at an economically viable price. We do demand access to zinc, copper, steel, iron, and other mineral resources that we no longer, you know, possess in our territory. So I think this is what's occurring. We're seeing a foreign policy that's reflective of the demands placed upon our government by the American people, and that prompts us to pass legislation such as the National Security Strategy that talks about global hegemony. Normally, an American, if you talk about American values, would reject the notion of global hegemony. It's un-American. But the fact is, we cannot exist as the nation state we are today without global hegemony. And I think many Americans don't realize that we are incompatible in many ways with the rest of the world, given the demands that we place on the rest of the world to maintain our standard of living.
And when we see we have a need in a certain commodity, we just decide who's got it and we're going to go get it. And we can do it nicely. We can do it from an economic point of view. But then if they resist our economic overturns or overtures and our offers of airports and power plants and water desalination organizations and whatnot, we can come in and make it a little more difficult for them.
We just divide the world into spheres of national security interests, national security in this case being defined by economic interests.
Yeah.
And we move forward, of course.
Yeah, now I want to talk to you about your new book coming up. But before I do, you touched briefly on Israel there. And I should tell our audience something that, and they know a lot about you, but I don't think they know this part about you. When you were in the Middle East and when you were in Iraq and you were doing the weapons inspection for the United Nations for representing America, you were actually America's point man there and our liaison with the Mossad and with the Israeli intelligence, and you got to know a lot of those guys pretty well.
I wouldn't say America's. I was the United Nations.
Excuse me, the United Nations liaison. But you worked hand in hand with the Israelis, and are you surprised at the severity of the response to the kidnapping?
Well, let me put it this way. Having been in Israel for a long period of time and having gotten to know many people in Israel, professional military personnel, professional intelligence personnel, what I would say is I am cognizant of the fact that the reality of the domestic political situation in Israel is a very complicated one, and that it's irresponsible to say the Israeli reaction. Many of the people that I know personally would not support what's happening today, and these are professional military intelligence, but the Likud party, the hard right wing of the Likud party, I am not surprised that this is occurring, because when the Likud is in power, this is how the Likud behaves. So it does not surprise me that the government of Israel, as it is currently formulated, is behaving in this manner. And if you take a look at what's happening inside Israel, you'll see that there is far from a complete homogeneous positive response to the Israeli incursion. This Israeli conflict in Lebanon is starting to tear Israel apart, and it will do so even more dramatically now that Israel has called up 30,000 reservists to deal with a Lebanese situation that is spinning terribly out of control from the Israeli perspective. When people start to reflect on the fact that, you know, Hezbollah's decision to kidnap two Israeli soldiers and kill six others in the process, or is not driven simply by irresponsible Hezbollah policy decisions, but the fact that Ariel Sharon reneged on a prisoner exchange back in 2004. I mean, there is a cause and effect relationship here. Nothing happens in a vacuum. I'm not giving a blessing to the Hezbollah actions.
No,
they're irresponsible and they're reprehensible. But they did not happen out of the blue. Israel wants everybody to believe that it just happened. It didn't just happen. Israel has been carrying out covert military sorties in Lebanon, assassinating Hezbollah, killing Hezbollah, bombing Hezbollah for years. And now Hezbollah responds in kind, and Israel acts shocked as if, oh my gosh, where did this happen? And then they overreact, as the Israelis are wont to do, take the moral high ground when they have no just claim to the moral high ground.
Terrific answer. I knew you'd have an insight on this that most people had not heard and whatnot. So in a phrase, we can say with the Likud party being as right-wing as they are and sort of a war party, and now we've got the Bush administration in here. When you put the Bush administration supporting the Likud party, you've got a formula for this deliciously delectable dance that we see unfolding in the Middle East, don't we?
It's an absolute recipe for disaster. You have a Bush administration that has taken a policy of global hegemony with a specific application of this policy in the Middle East called, the transformation of the Middle East, regime change in short. And you have the Likud party of Israel today talking about, not only a greater Israel, but also about an Israel that can only peacefully coexist with its neighbors if its neighbors embrace forms of government that are acceptable only to Israel, as if Israel, a nation of 5 million, gets to dictate the terms of coexistence with the, you know, its Arab neighbors who, you know, number in the hundreds of millions. It's a direct parallel policy to the Bush administration's viewpoint that 300 million Americans get to dictate the current terms of coexistence with billions of others who populate the earth. This is a recipe for disaster.
I hear you, and I believe every word that you're saying. Everything you've ever said to me has been true and come true and has proven true. Axis of evil, the three countries, Iran, Iraq, and North Korea, we picked on the least one of them, the one despite your pleas that they didn't have WMD. We've thought on our side that maybe, just maybe, that they're not smart and they're too smart to pick a fight with Iran. But now that is starting to bubble over. You've got a brand new book. It's coming out this fall called Target Iran. You make it perfectly clear that this is what they're going to do. Did you not find it frightening writing this book?
Well, I did. I mean, I wrote this book because I've been speaking out on this issue, and the obvious parallels are there. The biggest parallel, and the reason why I wrote this book...
Is this going to keep going with him for a minute or two, back off the music?
Is that the American people are buying into the same lies that they bought into on Iraq. You know, we were told by the Bush administration there were weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. No proof was provided, but we bought into it. We ended up in this quagmire. We now have the Bush administration saying that there's a nuclear weapons program in Iran. And what shocks me is that there is publicly available information that clearly proves that this is not the case. Most of this information is derived from UN weapons inspectors. But once again, the Bush administration could care less about the facts, because the facts don't support a policy. This is like the Downing Street memo all over again, where the Bush administration has embraced a policy of regime change and is fixing the facts around that policy. This is why I wrote the book. I call it, you know, the People's Intelligence Estimate. You read this book and you'll be able to cut right through the lies that have been assembled by the Bush administration about Iran. I just I wrote the book. I hope people will read it.
You got a couple of minutes? I'd like to hold you over for the break, because I'd like to talk about this. This is important stuff, and this is a very, very important book that people need to hear about. And, you know, we got talking about Israel and all that, and I didn't devote enough time to the book, and I think it's important. If you can stay with me.
Sure.
I appreciate it, Scott. Scott Ritter, former UN's weapons inspector, author, and patriotic American. He's going to hang with us through the break. We'll sell you a few products. We'll be right back on The Majority Report with John Elliott on the Air America Radio Network.
The Majority Report on Air America Radio. The left just got a little bit louder.
You're listening to AM 13.
You know something? There's nothing wrong with a culture where everyone has a different idea of what's humorous. The last time I can remember an entire nation being on the same page, it was Germany in the late 30s, and it didn't really turn out that funny. Remember, in its time and place, what Hitler said was considered politically correct. And it's that blind adherence to what is situationally palatable that is truly dangerous. We should question it all, poke fun at it all, sit on it all, rail against it all, and most importantly, for Christ's sake, laugh at it all. Because the only thing separating Holy Writ from complete Dishlof is your perspective. It's your only weapon. Keep the safety off. Don't take yourself too seriously. Remember that at the end of the day, this is just an ant farm with beepers, and it takes zero politically correct society to screw in a light bulb because they are perpetually in the dark. Of course, that's just my opinion. I could be wrong.
People that have to be really, really happy about all this news about the war is the Catholic Church. Oh, yeah, they got to be happy because they're off the front page of the paper for the first time in a long time. Woo! Woo! And I am a recovering Catholic. Some of you are here tonight, yes? So I've been following this story. I went to 16 years of Catholic education. I'm lucky I'm alive. I went to Our Lady of Psychological Warfare. I've always felt that if women have to be in the military, they should only be lesbians. Because we would never get around to having a war. Right? Because we'd have to have some meetings. A war in October? What about the softball banquet?
Time off. Sitting in for Sam Cedar. John Elliott, the most dangerous liberal in America.
Having the privilege of speaking with one of the most patriotic Americans I've ever had the privilege to talk to, Scott Ritter. The man who takes the heat, stands up, doesn't back down. And by the way, you know, I mentioned that he was a Republican and he voted for Bush, and now he's not in favor of Bush. I also know that Scott served with great distinction during the Clinton administration, and he wasn't too fond of Bill Clinton either. So I'm an equal opportunity provider of information here, Scott, I have to tell you. This is a fascinating book, and I've got the dry copy of it, and I want to jump right to the war party. We're about five chapters into the book, and you're talking about John Bolton. And you're talking about him having his ass handed to him by the International Atomic Energy Association, which is Mohammed Al-Baradei's outfit in Europe. And he didn't react very well to this, did he?
No, I mean, look, Bolton has, you know, when we talk about, for instance, we talk about Iraq and the disaster that we faced in Iraq. We talk about the architect, and the name that jumps up is Paul Wolfowitz. He's not Donald Rumsfeld. He's not Dick Cheney. But he's the man who put together the nuts and bolts of the American policy on Iraq. When we talk about Iran, John Bolton is to Iran like Wolfowitz was to Iraq. He's the man with the, you know, he's put together the nuts and bolts. He's been guiding this thing through. And one of the things that Bolton has been pushing for some time is a Security Council resolution having the issue transferred from the IAEA, the International Atomic Energy Agency, the UN inspectors, to the Security Council, because in doing so, you just take the inspectors right out of the picture, meaning you take fact out of the picture. When you eliminate the inspectors as the go-to guys on this issue, and you turn it over to a Security Council that is crippled by, you know, the irresponsible diplomacy of the United States with the Bush administration, you basically say facts no longer matter. This is about politics. And it's important on the Iranian case that facts don't matter, because if facts did matter, we would quickly know that there is no Iranian nuclear weapons program. Iran does not constitute a threat to the national security of the United States, and therefore there's no need to speak of conflict with Iran. But you know, that's not what Bolton wants. He wants to create a perception of a deadly Iran that must be dealt with by the Security Council, even though he openly despises the Council. And so he confronted the IAEA about Iran, only to be shot down by Mohammed al-Baradei. Now, to show you what kind of a good person Bolton is, he responds by, you know, initiating a personal attack on al-Baradei, trying to prevent him from, retaining his post as the...
Wasn't that his first humiliation after being appointed the UN ambassador, was the fact that he tried to have al-Baradei removed as heading up the International Atomic Energy Association, and the world came back and slapped him around?
That's right. Al-Baradei is somebody who had stood up to the United States on the issue of Iraq when no one else, including Hans Blix, would. He openly said that, you know, the intelligence data that being provided by the United States was based on forgery. When we talk about the Niger uranium shipments, he disagreed with the assessments put forward by Dick Cheney and others that aluminum tubes could be used for enrichment. And he said that the evidence clearly shows that Iraq does not have a nuclear weapons program. History proved him right. So he brought out, you know, he came out of the Iraq situation with a great deal of moral authority. And it's that moral authority that not only won him the Nobel Peace Prize, but also enables him to stand up to a global bully like John Bolton, and indeed the entire Bush administration. And so one of the big objectives of John Bolton was the removal of Mohammed al-Baradei from his position as Director General.
And now he's up for confirmation again. Isn't that a wonderful thing? The book is Target Iran by Scott Ritter, and filled with all sorts of little gems and nuggets, like the fact that John Bolton was on the board of directors of PNAC. Isn't that a comforting thought? Scott, it's always great to talk to you, man. Best of luck and success with this book. It's a killer.
Hey, thank you very much.
Thank you. It's Scott Ritter, Majority Report. I'm John Elliott.
Hey, you streaming listeners, open your media player and click on the link to NoHaggleMortgage.com right now, and you can save thousands on your mortgage loan. It's simple, easy, and takes less than 30 seconds. For the first time, homeowners can now have direct access to the same rates that mortgage brokers get.
That's right, the same rates that mortgage brokers get.
Three things allow NoHaggleMortgage.com to get the lowest mortgage rates in the industry.
One,
no commissions to pay to loan officers.
Two,
most of the work is done over the internet, saving you a lot of money.
Three,
no haggling. Click on the link now, then click on Quick Quote to find out what rate you can get. Get your money faster and save thousands. No gimmicks, no middleman, no haggling. Just simple, fast, friendly, low-rate mortgage loans. Skip the loan officer. Go direct to NoHaggleMortgage.com. You're already online. Take 30 seconds and find out for yourself. Or go to NoHaggleMortgage.com. Check it out today. Licensed by the DOC.
AM 1320 KCTC, Sacramento's Left Channel. Streaming live at 1320leftchannel.com.
CBS News, I'm Cammie McCormick. He denies cheating to win the Tour de France.
All I'm asking for, from me, is that I be given a chance to
to prove that I'm innocent.
Floyd Landis tested positive for high levels of testosterone, and now another set of tests will be analyzed. He's been suspended for now, and the sport is once again under scrutiny. Here's CBS News correspondent Armin Katayan.
But professional cycling, you know, there was a line that has been used before, but it was considered to be a rolling pharmacy on wheels for the longest time. There was a huge drug scandal in 1998, the so-called Festina drug scandal. The sport stayed relatively clean despite all the allegations surrounding Lance Armstrong.
Landis says even if he's cleared like Armstrong, the disgrace will probably follow him forever. Israeli tanks were on the move today in Gaza and Lebanon as the Israeli War Cabinet met to discuss what progress they've made. CBS News correspondent Dan Raviv has their assessment.
The military chief of staff, Dan Halutz, claimed Hezbollah has suffered hundreds of casualties, including some of the group's leaders. And he said the Air Force has caused serious damage to Hezbollah's ability to launch missiles. Still, over 100 rockets a day have been hitting northern Israel.
Israel.
Al-Qaeda's number two man, Ayman al-Zawahiri, appeared in a videotape message today urging Muslims worldwide to unite in a holy war.
I'm Peter Mayer at the White House. The administration views the latest terrorist call to arms as a weakened Al-Qaeda's attempt to stay in the game. President Bush dismissed the message.
Zawahiri's attitude about life is that there shouldn't be free societies. And he believes that people ought to use terrorist tactics, the killing of innocent people, to achieve his objective.
The president's spokesman took it a step further, calling al-Zawahiri a hypocrite for claiming to be a defender of Islam. But tough talk aside, the administration says it still takes every threat seriously.
In Baghdad, insurgents used mortars and rockets today to kill at least 31 people as the Pentagon agreed to extend some deployments. CBS News correspondent David Martin is at the Pentagon.
Defense Secretary Rumsfeld has made the decision to extend a brigade of about 3,700 troops currently in Iraq past their one-year tour of duty in order to be available for this new Baghdad security plan. The plan calls for putting about 4,000 troops, U.S. troops, into Baghdad to try to get a handle on this sectarian violence.
California's 12-day heat wave has claimed as many as 90 lives now. Bad weather in other parts of the nation, it's holding up flights. Some arrivals in Chicago's O'Hare being held up for 6 hours. Delays also reported in New York. On Wall Street today, the Dow finished off 2 points. This is CBS News.
You, playing Texas Hold'em with Mozart, fairies, kings, queens, albino aardvarks, karaoke singing koalas, the Sun City kickball team, wearing flippers, Sasquatch and Nessie holding hands at sunset in the Grand Canyon. Dreams, they can be strange and magical, but if you can't sleep, you can't dream. So ask your doctor about Rosarum, a sleep aid like no other, approved for adults having trouble falling asleep. Rosarum is the first and only prescription sleep aid that in clinical studies shows no potential for abuse or dependence, so you can get to sleep, and maybe your dreams will get to see you again.
Don't take Rosarum if you're taking Lubox, Fluvoxamine, or have severe liver problems. Avoid taking it with alcohol. Don't drive or operate machinery until you know how you'll react to Rosarum. Rosarum may affect certain hormones. Consult your doctor about how this may affect you, or if you're insomnia doesn't improve. Take Rosarum right before bed. Side effects may include drowsiness, fatigue, and dizziness. Individual results may vary. Ask your doctor today if Rosarum is right for you. For more information, call 1-877-ROSARUM-1, CRN Prevention Magazine, or visit Rosarum.com.
Swimming babies, dancing babies, singing babies.
The Senate's debating the confirmation of the current U.N. ambassador, John Bolton. CBS News correspondent Bob Fuss reports the president assigned Bolton to the job after earlier attempts to get Senate approval failed.
Republicans argue that after President Bush went around the Senate to give Bolton a recess appointment, he should be confirmed now to provide for continuity at the U.N. But Democrats like Chris Dodd aren't buying it.
When the score is tallied on the effectiveness of Mr. Bolton at the United Nations, I think he receives a failing grade.
One complaint about Bolton was his open disdain for the U.N., and he didn't seem to dispel that.
Has your impression of the U.N. changed? Has there been anything that surprised you in the last year? Not really.
If the Senate doesn't confirm Bolton, he'd have to step down as U.N. ambassador in January. Bob Fuss, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
Officials in Springfield, Vermont have denied a liquor license to a man who wanted to run a bar out of his prison cell. State officials didn't realize where he lived until they traveled to the address on his application form. I'm Cammy McCormick, CBS News.
Dad, it's...
Welcome to Los Angeles, where I believe the official sunscreen is now lead, isn't it, pretty much? Oh, my God, this heat. I was sweating like Naomi Campbell trying to hire a maid. It was so hot today. It was so hot in Hollywood today, Brad and Angelina adopted Ben and Jerry. Did you know that? It was so hot in Encino, Michael Jackson actually stopped at the Young Boys lemonade stand and just bought the lemonade. You know the worst part about this heat wave across the country is Al Gore walking around going, I told you so. Actually, if Al Gore's movie on global warming is correct, as you know, the ice caps are shrinking. You all know about that. The glaciers are shrinking. The only thing not shrinking, Al Gore, apparently. Have you seen Al? Really, not shrinking. I tell you, the heat, it puts people in a bad mood. You know, in fact, coming into work today, people were swearing like President Bush near an open mic. It was unbelievable.
Laughing at the Truth, AM 1320.
The Majority Report, America. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
John Elliott sitting in for Sam Cedar, Thursday evening. How are you? Thanks for spending part of your Thursday evening with us. We try and do the best we can. Yeah, we try and do every show as the best show we've ever done. And sometimes we do. Sometimes it isn't. This show has had Scott Ritter, marvelous author, and of course, shedding a light on Israel that not too many people were familiar about, that they didn't know that about him. That he was the liaison between the United Nations weapons inspectors and the Mossad and people inside of Israel. And also, we have the great Paul Krugman on. And this hour, we're going to have Michael Shearer. Do not move. You will love this guy. He is a longtime CIA agent. He opened up the Bin Laden Unit and managed the Bin Laden Unit at the CIA. He was the author of the best-selling book Imperial Hubris that was out a year or so ago. And he's got a new book out called Through Our Enemy's Eyes. Osama bin Laden, Radical Islam, and the Future of America. He'll be joining us this hour. Oh, boy. Meanwhile, the Senate is debating a couple of bills today. Bill 2453 and 2455. Here's all you need to know about the bills. They're called the Cheney-Specter bills. Doesn't that give you a warm fuzzy? Remember the NSA wiretapping? Remember the illegal NSA wiretapping? The fact that the Bush administration was actually using the NSA, not using the FISA court, not obtaining warrants, going in and wiretapping people illegally. And that everybody has been saying that it is. Well, now what they want to do is they're going to fix it. So what they're going to do is instead of making it the illegal act that it is and requiring compliance under the FISA Act, they're going to change the rules. They're going to fix the intelligence to fit. Oh, wasn't that what it was in the Downing Street memo? Fix the intelligence to fit the political scene. Well, now here we have a bill 2453, and it would enshrine in federal law the president's claim of inherent power to wiretap Americans at will without any individual independent check. As someone I know and respect said to me, it would be the Patriot Act on steroids. CW, good phrase. Bill 2455. It would also make judicial review of each individual wiretap optional, which, of course, it was pointed out to me, destroys our fundamental Fourth Amendment rights. This lady's an activist. She gets in touch with me, and I pass on from time to time some of her thoughts. Those are her thoughts. She said that we need to demand that the committee hold a hearing to question the phone companies regarding their actions. The committee must issue subpoenas to force government officials and phone company executives to truthfully answer questions regarding the President Bush's warrantless surveillance of America. You need to write your senators. You need to email them tonight. Then you need to email them tomorrow. Then you need to call their office, and you need to voice an opinion with whoever answers and say, we want you to oppose Senate Bills 2453 and 2455. You cannot do away with the FISA court and make the president of this country the imperial wizard, that he would have inherent power to turn around and wiretap any American he wants without any individual independent check, without checking, without congressional oversight, without the FISA court. They're gutting the court. They made a damn law, and now they haven't adhered to the law. Now they want to change the law. They want to do away with the FISA court's oversight. We've already had a judge in the FISA court resign because of this, for God's sake. Yesterday, I asked the question if
there'd ever been a more incompetent group of people in the Bush crowd, with Condi Rice taking the in-over-her-head gold medal, and she didn't have to take any performance-enhancing drugs to win that prize. And I also told you about an article in a conservative magazine calling for her to be sent to the showers. Richard Perle and Newt and the neocons, the real neo-neos. But I didn't tell you who they wanted to replace her. James Baker. Ah, you say former Secretary of State James Baker. That James Baker replacing her as Secretary of State? Yeah. But also the same James Baker that you saw during the Florida recounts in 2000 saying, the votes have been counted again and again and again, and of course they were never recounted. The same Jim Baker of Baker Botts, the Houston law firm that represents the Bin Laden family. But since the Bin Laden family now has sort of, because of the little dust-up with their protege and their relative Osama, they're not as involved anymore. You know, they're maybe just throwing a few bucks into Carlisle and whatnot. But then, you know, Jim Baker's, you know, he doesn't need to worry about the crowd anymore. He doesn't have to worry about the Osama crowd. He doesn't need to represent them anymore. He's done a nice job with them. Now he's free. He can hang out and be Secretary of State. Steve, Portland, Oregon. You've been waiting on hold since noon yesterday. My goodness, thank you for your patience. Welcome to the Majority Report. You're on with John Elliott. How you doing?
Pretty good. Been enjoying every minute of it, actually.
Thank you.
Yeah, what Scott Ritter was saying, if I could be so presumptuous as to bring his viewpoint into my argument,
sure,
actually lends a lot of credence. There's been a lot of reporting in papers around the world that the events of July the 12th, when the two Israeli soldiers were taken hostage, actually happened in Lebanese territory. And I can give you a URL which refers to an article which has a review of all these newspaper articles, if you'd like.
Yeah, I would. I would like. And Gregory here is going to jot it down and then we'll pull it up. Yeah, that's an interesting take. The other thing is, and your point being sort of amplifying what Scott Ritter said, which is that Israel has been running some incursions into Lebanon and some surreptitious attacks and some behind-the-scenes stuff, and they don't have clean hands in this. And Hezbollah did this, to retaliate, to instigate. It's a fight in a schoolyard, you know. I don't mean to belittle it, but it's who pushed who first, and who shoved who first, and who threw the first stone. And the reality is, according to the San Francisco Chronicle over the weekend, that it's pretty clear that Israel had a plan 3 years ago, specifically to go after Hezbollah and specifically to start going after on a heavy duty bombing campaign, which is why they had such a large outstanding order of missiles from the United States, and we're supplying them with the material to do that. So it's not surprising to me that the public opinion would say that this would be in Israel, when in fact it very much could have happened inside of Lebanon. And the point is, it doesn't make much difference, does it? Because,
well, actually, it makes a bit of difference, because
does make a difference, but in the big picture, they were going to go to war anyway. So,
well, you know, I fear most in my most conspiratorial thoughts is that George Bush knows that the issue of Israel is what really divides the Democrats, right? So could he have actually said to the Likud party or the Kadima party, who jointly control the government, do something now to divide the Democrats? Could that have actually happened?
Well, we have an election coming up, and starting another war seems to be something that's in his playbook. The last few elections, of course, because of this terror all the time, Steve, the last few elections, there's always a threat of a terrorist attack just before the election, right?
Yeah.
It just seems to happen. And now we're into I think that this is a little bit more than they expected. I talked, I think I'd mentioned last night that I had spoken to Christopher Dickey, the Mideast correspondent, Mideast bureau chief for Newsweek magazine, and he said that it's a proxy battle between Iran and Israel using Hezbollah. And if what Scott Ritter is saying is true, that John Bolton has been working behind the scenes feverishly to get us to go to war and attack Iran, then a little prodding like that, maybe by Israel, maybe by Bush saying, yeah, go pick a fight with them, and then it'll get Iran up, and they'll start supplying more into Lebanon, to Hezbollah, and we'll be able to say to them, hey, you guys back off, or we're going to come into it. And it's an excuse. It's a proxy. You send somebody in to start a fight and throw a little stink bomb into the classroom, and then you can come in after. Yeah, there's always that possibility.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Well, thanks for having Scott Ritter on. That was great.
Well, wait till you hear this next guy that's coming on, Michael Shearer. You will not believe him. This guy is world class. He's unbelievable. He'll be on at the bottom of the hour. Hey, Steve, thanks for listening to us up in Portland. Boy, oh, boy, oh, boy. 866-303-2270. That's 866-303-2270. If you'd like to get on the air and speak to me, John Elliott, on the Majority Report on the Air America Radio Network, we're going to sell you a couple of things, and then we're going to come right back.
The Majority Report on Air America Radio, where free thinkers think freely.
It's the Randy Rhodes Show.
At Cache Creek Casino Resort, win fast, win often with Cache Fever Jackpot. Jackpots start at $20,000 and are guaranteed to hit by $30,000. Every time a Cache Fever jackpot hits, a Cash Club player wins just for playing with their card. Plus, you can check the Cache Fever jackpot total and your Cash Club points online now at CacheCreek.com. So join Cache Club today and get the fever. Cache Creek Casino Resort.
You got this, man! We have to stand up for the protection of the illegal.
most liberal in America, John Elliott.
The Majority Report. Hello, America. John Elliott, how are you? Happy Thursday. This just in, Pat Robertson said today, God told him the United States hasn't assassinated Venezuelan leader Hugo Chavez, and that it's hot and God is going on her summer vacation. Karen, Manhattan. How are you? You're on the Majority Report with John Elliott. How are you doing?
Good, and thank you very much. The interview with Scott Ritter was really informative. I wanted to say that I read in the New York Times that the U.S. gives $3 billion a year to Israel, mostly, of course, weapons and military support. Hillary Clinton and Schumer support this. They're big defenders of our Israeli policy. I think it's very undemocratic. I think there should be a national referendum on what our relationship should be with Israel. This, our policy is so one-sided. And I'm not a student of the Middle East. I really don't, I can't say I know the issue well, but from everything I do know, it just seems that U.S. policy of the Bush administration is so one-sided. And I just feel infuriated as an American that this continues to go on.
It is, but let me ask you a question. Do you believe in Israel's right to exist as a nation?
You know, I don't know enough about the region. I do support, I believe that there was a UN resolution on a two-state solution. I do support that.
Well, there is a two-state solution, and that is that there's Israel and then there's Palestine.
But there is, when you look at a map, there's no Palestine.
Well, yeah, well. There is and there isn't, and yeah,
well,
you're right. You're right to that extent, but
Palestine. Those lands are being occupied by Israel.
Yeah, some of the lands are being occupied, and the rest are living in ghetto camps. I grant you.
So then, where's Palestine?
Yeah, it's there, but it's not really there. So, but the fundamental question is: should the Jewish race, should Israel have a homeland at all in the Holy Land? And I think the majority of the people say, yes, they should. And then if you say that they have this holy land, then the thing is, should they have the right to defend it? And
well,
I think that the answer to that
know.
Is yes. And then here's my last point. Hang on. Karen, just give me a second. If you believe they have a right to a homeland and the right to defend it, and they're reaching out and they need some help, and if we don't give them help, if we, the United States, do not provide help in the form of assistance, then who will?
The assistance. We are arming Israel to do what looks to me like huge violations of international human rights law. This is
that's something different, though. See, I just wanted to talk to you about, does it have a right to exist? Do we have a right to defend? And do we need to give it support? Because if we don't, other people, they're not going to get much support worldwide. So I think that we're all in accord on that as a concept.
I think you're dangerously into the ends justifies the means territory. And
No, I'm not. I'm not going there. I'm just saying that if we look at their right to exist, which I believe they absolutely have a right to exist. That's the beginning. You know, they have a right to exist.
They do exist. I mean, I don't even know why people are debating that. Of course Israel exists.
Well, because the people
Palestine to exist.
The people in Hezbollah and Hamas do not want Israel to exist.
I think they want to have their Arab lands no longer occupied. I think they want not to be on the receiving end of human rights violations. I don't even want to debate this Israel. Israel, of course they have a right to exist. They do exist, but they don't have a right to occupy Arab lands. They don't have a right to engage in wholesale human rights violations of Arab people.
I agree. I agree with you on that point. I in talking to Christopher Dickey I keep referring to him. I'm a huge fan of his. I think he's the best foreign correspondent we have, print foreign correspondent. He's the Mideast bureau chief for Newsweek. He's written forever on it. He's written books. He's been on television about it, and he's lived in the region for 20 years. And he says that the way to understand the Arab mindset is, first of all, you have to realize that we, as the United States, don't. All right. We don't have the right. We don't understand how the Arab mindset. So it's difficult to rationalize.
Do we
and deal
understand
with.
The Israeli mindset?
Oh yeah. And secondly, the other thing is that Israel is occupying land, and when you use phrases like occupied territories as a noun or a verb,
then you're in the position that you realize that people are occupying other people. And if you take that and you look at that from that attitude, and you said he compared it to the Civil War, which was a just war, but the North did occupy the South, and his point was, and he's a man of the South, has the South forgotten? And of course, the South has not forgotten that the Yankees in the blue uniforms came down and Sherman sort of burned Atlanta. That has not gone away, and that's 150 years ago. So I think what you really look at is the fact that the Arabs really are taking the point of view that the Israelis are occupying their land. And when you are in the Gaza Strip and you're in the occupied territories, it does come up to something. So we have the problem here, and if it sounds like I'm coming down on both sides of the equation, I am. I believe that Israel has a right to exist. I have a belief that they have a right to defend themselves. I also believe that there should be a home for the Palestinians, and I believe that Israel should get out of occupied territory, and I believe that the world should realize and recognize the borders, and I realize that we should put in a NATO force to keep the peace. Because clearly the peace is not being kept. And if it means the world has to come in and say, boys, stop fighting, this is what we're going to do, everybody's at fault, everybody back off, then that's what's going to happen. Because I for one, don't particularly enjoy watching the carnage that's going on over there. In fact, we're seeing more carnage carried on our newspapers on a conflict that's taking place in Lebanon than we did on the conflict in Iraq. And yet our guys are over there every day going through this, but it's not being covered. So our mainstream media is distracting the attention from Iraq, which is a quagmire, and focusing it on a horrible situation that's taking place in the Middle East, in Lebanon right now. Does that answer your question?
Is in the U.S.
Pardon?
Someone told me there's more debate in Israel among Israelis on this question, and more informed debate, where many Israelis are disgusted with what the policy...
Correct.
And
correct.
We don't have enough debate. I know Jonathan Tessini, who's running against Hillary, made a statement yesterday. It was in the New York Times, and they are all over him. And all he took the position that Israel was far too aggressive in this situation. And they are all over him, ready to hang him. I think we need more debate.
Okay, thanks for the call. I've got to go, Karen. John Elliott, Air America, Radio Network, The Majority Report. Lots more show to go. We're going to be back with Michael Shearer. Do not miss this interview.
The Majority Report on Air America Radio.
A liberal dose of the truth.
It's the best bike vacation ever. 3 days of cycling in the Sierra foothills, camping under the stars, catered gourmet meals, entertainment, and in-camp activity. It's the 20th annual Emigrant Trails Bike Trek, Friday, September 8th through Sunday, September 10th. This excellent adventure attracts over 400 bicycle riders and helps support Breathe California Sacramento's efforts to improve air quality in our area and to work to eliminate lung disease. Make your plans now and start raising much-needed funds by registering today at sacbreathe.org or by calling 916-444-5900. You can ride as an individual or put together a team of co-workers or friends. Travel at your own pace through stunning scenery, then relax in a camp with massage, yoga, or a beverage from the cantina. Free training rides prepare you for the best bike vacation ever. The 20th Annual Emigrant Trails Bike Trek, September 8th through September 10th. 3 days of cycling, camping, and fun. Go to sacbreathe.org or call 916-444-5900 and sign up today.
Casino Resort. Win fast, win often with Cash Fever Jackpot. Jackpots start at $20,000 and are guaranteed to hit by $30,000. Every time a Cash Fever jackpot hits, a Cash Club player wins just for playing with their card. Plus, you can check the Cash Fever jackpot total and your Cash Club points online now at CashCreek.com. So join Cash Club today and get the fever. Cash Creek Casino Resort.
Today is one of those rare days that is brightened by death. Al-Qaeda mastermind Abu Musab al-Zarqawi is al-Kablooey. Isn't that terrific? Yeah. That'll make it even easier to stay the course in Iraq. Or get out on a high note. Anyway, al-Zarqawi's death is just the latest proof that we're winning the war on terror. There was also that bust in Canada, the arrests in England, and here in the U.S., Ann Coulter finally got those 9/11 widows on the run. And there's something else. Years ago, Newsweek reported that a single 40-year-old woman had a better chance of being killed by a terrorist than getting married. But in their latest issue, they're saying that she is more likely to get married than be killed by a terrorist. Newsweek, thank you for finally reporting some good news on the war on terror.
Laughing at the truth, AM 1320.
Now, back to the most dangerous liberal in America, John Elliott.
Back to the Majority Report with John Elliott on the Air America Radio Network. Thank you for joining us tonight. Michael Schur is a gentleman that I had on my my program here in San Diego on the weekend, and I was so taken with this gentleman, I said I've got to share him with the Air America audience. It's an illustrious career at the CIA, wrote the national bestseller Imperial Hubris, wrote it as anonymous because he did not come out as a CIA agent at that point in time. Has another book called Through Our Enemy's Eyes, Osama Bin Laden, Radical Islam and the Future of America. This is a man who knows more about Osama bin Laden in the Western world than just about anyone who lives, because he actually started the Osama bin Laden unit inside the CIA back in the mid to late 90s, and has been chasing this guy and following this guy for years. Michael, how are you? Welcome to the program.
Thank you, sir. I'm very well. Yourself?
I'm just grand. I'm even better now that you're on the program.
Well,
I have to tell you.
You're very kind, sir. Thank you.
Don't, please, stop with the sir stuff. It's John, for Christ. We covered this the last time. Remember the right. Jesuits and the... introduction to your book, Imperial Hubris. You say, as I complete this book, U.S., British, and other coalition forces are trying to govern apparently ungovernable post-war states in Afghanistan and Iraq while simultaneously fighting growing Islamic insurgencies in each a state of affairs our leaders call victory. This was written in 2004. Let's fast forward to today. What has changed since you wrote that then?
I think things have gotten measurably worse, sir. John, I'm sorry. Certainly the insurgency in Afghanistan is picking up steam. The war in Iraq continues to be a disaster. I heard today we're sending 5,000 more troops into Baghdad. And, of course, the war that's going on at the moment in the Levant between the Lebanese Hezbollah and the Israelis, that will add to our problems, too. And we're, frankly, losing the war on most fronts. We're engaged. And it's probably more due to the fact that we have no idea, really, within our government what this war is about.
Why is that? Are they not paying attention to the analysts at the CIA? I mean, we've heard conflicting stories. We've heard the CIA, who doesn't have the microphone, trying to talk against the administration, who does. And we heard that Douglas Feith was set aside by Dick Cheney to set up his own intelligence division within the office of the vice president because they weren't getting the type of information from your office at the CIA that they wanted.
Well, this certainly has to do a little bit with that, sir. This administration is probably one of the worst that I ever worked for in terms of accepting the reality of what the world looks like if it disagrees with their view. But it's more than that. We continue to argue in both parties in America that we're being attacked and we're having these problems because people hate liberty and hate freedom and hate gender equality. And while Osama bin Laden's country wouldn't look like ours, what this war has to do with is what America is doing overseas in terms of supporting Arab tyrannies, of unqualified support for Israel, our occupation of Iraq and Afghanistan. And we really, 5 years after 9/11, our officials are, in any event, not showing any sign that they realize what this war is about.
Is this a war against Islam, a war against the Muslim religion, or is this a war against Arabs? Who the hell are we after here?
It's more or less that they're after us, okay. John. I wouldn't say that this is it's the reaction of a religion that feels itself cornered and being attacked by U.S. foreign policy and by Western foreign policy as a whole. This is not a reaction to our culture or our lifestyle. It's a reaction to our foreign policies in that part of the world over the last 35 or 40 years. And while it may not be fair to say that we are at war with Islam, it's more than fair to say that a tremendous number of Muslims are at war with us.
This all comes really, I guess, from Osama bin Laden, and you quote in your book, and this again from the introduction of Through Our Enemy's Eyes. It's been 9 years since we've been struggling against the United States, Osama bin Laden told the media in May 1998, and I'm alive in front of you despite all the attempts to kill me. In these 9 years, we have inflicted considerable damage on the United States and will continue to do the same in the future. This was May 1998. This is way before George Bush. I had heard that Sandy Berger had a meeting with Condoleezza Rice at the handover, one national security advisor to the other, and said, your biggest problem is going to be Al-Qaeda, and you guys need to keep your eye focused on the ball. And she just kind of shrugged her shoulders and went, yeah, right. And I may not have the exact verbiage correct, but that's the type of feeling that I got that was handed down to you, that you, and it's a collective you in the CIA, Michael, that your work was not that important anymore because they really didn't believe it was as significant a problem as you did.
John, I think that's exactly right. This administration in particular was made up of people who matured and who worked first in the government during the Cold War, and they were very attuned to threats from nation states, but they could not bring themselves to believe that a threat to American national survival could come from a group that had no home address. And so they were loath to believe that. They were very comfortable dealing with Russia, China, North Korea, and obviously Iraq.
Now, these are countries with armies that wear uniforms, and they have weapons, and they have weapons, and we have weapons, and you know, it's a standoff, and it's the Cold War, and we know who the enemy are. And this is a sort of a vaporized enemy, a transparent enemy with no homeland and no uniforms. And
No return address on this one.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Now, and Afghanistan, you touched on Afghanistan, and it seems to me that it's worse now than it was, you know, when we were there before we went into Iraq.
Yes, it is worse now, and it's the kind of a country, John, that what you need to do is to go in and do whatever business you need to do. And in our case, it was simply to find and kill Bin Laden and Zawahiri and their lieutenants, and then leave. Because there's no place on earth where familiarity breeds contempt and hatred more than in Afghanistan. And we've just overstayed our welcome. The Afghans are tremendously small-D democratic people. They take a long time to talk about things and decide what to do. But what we're seeing in the last year and what we'll see into the future now is they finally decided that they can no longer tolerate a foreign occupation. And so the pace of this insurgency will increase, not accelerated in a you know 90 mile an hour kind of fashion, but a gradual increase in the level of violence directed at us and the government we support in that country.
There's a quote in your book from Mullah Omar, but there's a previous quote that refers to the fact that the Afghanistan people really made life miserable for the Russians when they were there. And then we turn around and we go in, and the quote from Mullah Omar is in 2002, and it says, "Today the United States in Afghanistan deludes itself with the vanity of apparent power and imagines that its fate will be better than the fate of earlier invaders. Apparently has not read Afghanistan's history properly." And that's exactly what you're saying, is that now, the longer you're there, the worse it gets, and we've been there a long time, and it's just going to get worse.
It's going to get very much worse, because now Pakistan, for all the complaints we lodge against the Pakistanis have been the best allies we've had so far in the war against terrorism, and now we've installed a government in Kabul that's anti-Pakistani and that is close friends with Pakistan's mortal enemy in India. And so we're just about run out of what the Pakistanis will do for us. And so the situation really in Afghanistan is eroding pretty quickly. And I'm not quite sure we have a handle on that fact yet.
Now, speaking of India, as you just dropped India into our conversation, I had Congressman Bernie Sanders on the program yesterday, and he said, I said, what bills you got faced before you check out for the summer? And he said, well, we've got one bill on providing nuclear weaponry to India. And I raised the question of a nation that will not sign the Nuclear Nonproliferation Agreement being given nuclear components by us, where at the same time their mortal enemy, the Pakistanis, are being denied that, yet the Pakistanis are working more with us on the war on terror. How can we resolve that, or can we? And are we not going to offend Pakistan if we go with India on this?
Oh, it's very much the case that we have really upset the Pakistani military, which is, of course, the base of support for President Musharraf.
From Musharraf, yeah.
Yeah. India and Pakistan are always at daggers drawn, and notwithstanding what Pakistan has done to help us so far since 2001, President Bush not only went to India before he went to Pakistan, but he agreed to help make the Indian nuclear program more efficient and more modern.
And he didn't even want to spend the night in Afghanistan because it was too dangerous.
Yes, that's correct.
What does that say? I mean, that isn't that, and we've heard the term saving face that is so prevalent in Southeast Asia with the Japanese and the Koreans and the Filipinos. It seems to extend itself also to the Indian subcontinent, doesn't it?
Very much so. And in terms of the Pakistanis, throughout the Cold War, the Pakistanis were on our side, if you will. The Indians were always trying to put a stick in our spokes. And I'm very sure that the Pakistanis cannot fathom why, at this point in time, we have decided to aid their greatest enemy. It's just, I think they're probably just bewildered by it.
It's baffling to me, because these are people that we should, you know, if they've helped us as much as we believe they have, it's just extraordinary. It's, again, the foreign policy, another illustration of the foreign policy. When we talk about the disastrous foreign policy of the current administration, Michael, we're talking about
you know, Iraq and now Iran. And in the meantime, oh, by the way, look what we're doing with Afghanistan / Pakistan / India. Everywhere we go, we're just spreading pain, misery, and confusion.
It's certainly not in America's interest what's going on at the moment, John. I think sometimes we have a tendency as Americans to put everything in separate boxes.
Yes, we do.
I think right now, for example, we have Afghanistan in a box, Iraq in a box, and the Levant in a box, and we really don't see the interconnection among the three. And as a result, we do things that are really pretty stupid. And I don't know really what the reason is for that, but we don't see the world whole. We see it in little slices.
Yeah, and it's yeah, you're right. We compartmentalize everything. We really do. Now, I'm going to ask you about this. We should tell our listening audience that the Bin Laden unit was established in what was it, 1996 or 98? 96. And you headed up the unit. It was established off premises from Langley. You had your own world to operate in, away from the oversight of Langley. And you were charged with tracking and finding and dealing with Osama Bin Laden. And the unit was just recently closed down. It's been a source of embarrassment for the President of the United States, who did the cowboy-esque, I want him dead or alive, and I'm going to get him, and all of those, you know, Gary Cooper-type statements. And abruptly and quietly, the unit was closed down, and we're obviously, are we giving up the look for him?
No, they're not giving up. It's a tragedy to close the unit down, but it was entirely predictable. It was a bureaucratic decision. The Bin Laden unit operated out of the normal chain of command within the agency, and the senior leaders of the agency hated it. And they couldn't do much about it because, notwithstanding what people think, the unit was very effective, more effective under my successors than myself, but still, throughout its history, was very effective. The bureaucrats just took the opportunity of the distraction provided by North Korea, by the Iraq War, by now Lebanon, to get rid of a bureaucratic anomaly that caused them a lot of heartburn. And it's very traditional within the bureaucracy these days. America be damned, we'll run things the way we want to do it. And so it's really a disservice to the American people, I believe, to the officers who have prosecuted this mission. And it also sends a heck of a message to people who we keep pressing to do more to help us, whether it's the Pakistanis or the Saudis or whoever else is out there.
And we're certainly not a safer nation or a more secure nation, knowing that this unit that you headed up inside the CIA to find Bin Laden has now been disbanded. We can't possibly think we're safer, can we?
No, sir. It's pretty much what we're seeing is just an ongoing back to business as usual, back to a world that's divided into neat geographic areas, back to a focus on nation states rather than these transnational groups. And really, it's not to the security of America. It means less security rather than more.
Yeah. The book is Imperial Hubris. It was a bestseller for Michael Shearer. And now the other book is Through Our Enemy's Eyes, Osama Bin Laden, Radical Islam, and the Future of America. They're essential reading to understand exactly what our foreign policy is, what our foreign policy should be, and maybe, what our foreign policy could be. Michael Shearer, it's always great to have you on, sir. I really appreciate your time this Thursday evening. Thank you so much.
John, you're very kind. I appreciate it. Thank you.
My pleasure. Michael Shearer, former CIA agent. New York Times bestselling author and the gentleman that started and managed and ran the Bin Laden unit inside the CIA. It's the Majority Report with John Elliott. We'll be right back. Still more show to go. Don't go away.
The Majority Report.
Are you ready to sit down and listen?
Janine Garofalo and Sam Cedar.
Sit down. Sit down and hear.
Only on Air America Radio.
Can you hear now?
You're listening to AM 1320.
if you send mixed messages.
Of course we're after Saddam Hussein. I mean, bin Laden. He's let me say, I certainly hope so. Before I...
If you send mixed messages.
That's a loaded question. First of all, I admire Senator Kerry's service to our country.
If you send mixed messages.
I admire the fact that he is a great dad. We're facing
If you send mixed messages.
Let me finish. And so the answer to your question is, no doubt about it, it's tough. It's hard work.
I always consider myself the father of four boys, even though two of my sons are gone. Our twins, Kevin and Brian, died when their boat capsized. Bad weather, cold water, and the absence of life jackets contributed to their deaths. If I can help one person avoid the daily heartbreak that my wife and family must endure, then asking you to be responsible on your boat will be well worth my time. Visit BoatSmarter.com, and remember, if it's your boat, it's your responsibility.
It's not something that you just dump something on. It's not a big truck. It's a series of tubes. Tubes. It really is the Internet consumer bill of rights. Because you got tangled up with all of these things and going on the Internet commercially. The world has turned against this. If your own personal Internet, that is you and me. You and me, it's the Internet. It's not something that you just dump something on. It's not a big truck.
Laughing at the Truth, AM 1320.
It's a series of tubes.
Is taking some time off, sitting in for Sam Cedar, John Elliott, the most dangerous liberal in America.
It's quiet in Haifa tonight. It's not quiet in Beirut. It's quiet in southern Lebanon. But then it's our parts of southern Lebanon are not quiet. But meanwhile, ConocoPhillips announced a 65% increase in quarterly profits, $5 billion. $80,000 a minute. But more than twice as much as that, the $10.3 billion announced by Exxon, the second largest amount ever reported as a net profit for a 90-day period in American business history. The first position was held by Exxon last quarter with $10.7 billion. What are you paying for gas? You better off today than you were 4 years ago? I don't think so. Shelley in Bronx, New York. How are you? You're on the Majority Report with John Elliott.
Hi. I think you're doing a great job.
Thanks.
I miss Sam, but I think you are like dynamite as well.
Thank you very much.
I just want to talk about the previous caller said something about there's not a lot of debate here in America about the situation, whether you're pro-Israeli.
I think she was referring not to you and me and not the man on the street and not at the office and the water cooler and the supermarkets. I think she was referring to in Congress. I mean, we talked about it yesterday with Congressman Bernie Sanders and Shelley. He said that, you know, it's there's a lot of chatter that's taking place amongst the party and in the hallways and in the corridors of power, but there's nothing really being done at the
because it seems
level.
Like no one wants to talk about it. It's like it's you're not supposed to talk. You're just not supposed to say anything negative at all about the Israeli occupation. And I have a lot of Jewish friends that actually talk about annihilation. I mean, they've actually said that. They've said that they feel that the Palestinians should just be wiped out, you know.
And, but then the Palestinians, a lot of Hamas feels exactly the same way about Israel. It's a horrible situation. I think there is a standard in this country that you are criticized. You're called anti-Semitic if you criticize Israel.
Yeah.
I'm very pro Israel. I really believe they have a reason to exist, and I would like to defend their right to be able to defend themselves.
I believe that too. I believe that they have a reason to exist as well, but I don't think that it's right that they should invade Lebanon. I mean, Lebanon was picking back up so nicely, and people said it was like the Paris of the Middle East.
The Middle East, and Beirut was the New York and the financial capital. It's very unfortunate, but we'll keep an eye on it. We'll be talking about it again tomorrow, Shelley. Unfortunately, as always, I end up running out of time. I need another hour. Michael, go take an hour's break. Give me your hour, Mike Malloy. It's John Elliott on the Majority Report, getting ready to head to the airport for an all-night flight to New York. I'll be talking to you tomorrow from Air America Studios in Manhattan. Going to have great guests. Do not miss tomorrow's show. It's my last show of the week. I'm going to be reading a tribute to American soldiers that have fallen in Iraq this month. Have yourself a great evening and a terrific day tomorrow, and we'll pick you up tomorrow on the Air America Radio Network on the Majority Report. John.